Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here, and I'm very excited today because we are going to be learning about something new, and we're going to be talking about Enneagrams. This is something that I tried to learn about once before. It didn't necessarily take, so we're going to try it again. And here to help us learn about Enneagrams and how they pertain to Survivor is the great Chappelle is here. Chappelle, how are you?
I'm good, Rob. I'm a little confused.
Yeah.
We didn't discuss Survivor. I wanted to talk to you about the Enneagram because I knew you didn't understand it. But we don't have to talk about
We're not going to talk about how it relates to Survivor?
I mean, Rob, I know very little about you, and so we can relate it to Survivor. I know you speak that language,
yeah.
But I'd be willing to talk about it in the grand scheme of things as well. So we don't have to limit it to Survivor if you don't want to.
Can I put this episode?
It makes my job a lot easier
in the Survivor podcast feed, Chappelle.
You probably shouldn't.
Shouldn't?
I mean, like I said, I'm not going to get into, and I will explain why. But this is not going to be like a let's talk about Sandra's Enneagram. It's just going to be that's far too difficult. And that's part of the reason why it didn't work the first time.
Mm-hmm.
So, so maybe put it in the main feed, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So Chappelle, we're talking about Enneagrams that, what I'm alluding to is that once upon a time in 2019, Colton Cumbie had called me up and said, "Hey, we need to podcast about Enneagrams. I'm obsessed with Enneagrams and they totally changed the way that I'm looking at Survivor." I said, "Colton, this sounds like something that would be primo off-season content. Let's talk about it once we get through this riveting Edge of Extinction season. Let's talk about it then." And we did. And in fairness to Colton, he had one of the all-time worst internet connections that anybody has ever had to call into the podcast. But and I was very confused the whole time. He was losing me a little bit. And I think that had we had a better connection, I think I would have been able to understand it better.
Yeah, I get that. And that was Edge of Extinction, right? So it was a pretty... That's a good ending to a season, I guess you'd say, to be confused in. So, you know, there was a lot of confusing things going on at that time during the Edge. So I'm not shocked that this is something that continued to confuse you. I'm sure that was right after the finale, wasn't it?
It was, a couple of weeks after the finale. And so that Chappelle and I, of course, have been talking about Big Brother. And I said, "Chappelle, what are we going to podcast about now that Big Brother is over?" And Chappelle said, "Enneagrams." And I said, "Wait, what?" This is one of my areas of expertise, Enneagrams.
Well, look, I didn't say expertise. Now, listen, we're going to have to get into semantics all the time here because what I'm saying is I remember that podcast. People said, "You know, I really wish Rob understood this. I, too, wish you understood it. And I would like to talk about it with you." Now, do I consider myself an expert? No, because there are people who take this really, really seriously. And I want to be very clear that I'm not making light of this almost like community of, you know, like surrounding this personality quiz. But I do want to say that
it's a quiz,
like, you know, I wouldn't say quiz, personality assessment.
Okay.
You know, that's probably better. But yeah, I don't want to make light of it, but I definitely am not an expert. I just come here to have a good conversation and hopefully clear up some things that you might not have understood.
The one thing I remember was that Colton said, "Yes, that here you are. You're the same as Sheehan and Bob Crowley."
Yeah, and we know how much you love Sheehan.
Well, I don't even understand what these people have in common. Me, Sheehan, and Bob Crowley. What is the common denominator?
Which is why I told you we probably shouldn't look at this through the lens of Survivor. I mean, but basically at that point, it sounds like what Colton was doing was these are the smart people from each season, right? So like Sheehan was supposed to be like the one who was kind of shrewd that season. She jumped ship. You know, Bob Crowley is a scientist and you were, you know, like a wise guy. You kind of, you know, recreated some strategy there. So maybe he was kind of putting y'all in that bubble.
Yeah.
But the Enneagram doesn't really lean toward that much. So,
okay.
Yeah. So it was difficult for him, I'm sure.
All right. First thing, Chappelle, can you tell us what is an Enneagram for somebody who's like 5 minutes into this podcast and is wondering what it is that we're going to talk about?
All right. So the Enneagram is, like I said earlier, a personality assessment, I guess, kind of. It's more like a way similar to Myers-Briggs of looking at personality and understanding your motivations and other people's motivations. And so it's called Enneagram because Ennea means nine and gram means chart. So there's a chart with nine numbers around it, and each number describes a different type of personality. So whereas Myers-Briggs has like 16, Enneagram has limited that to nine.
Okay. Second question.
Okay.
How did you learn so much about this? Are you a big part of the Enneagram community?
I'm about as big a part of that community as I am about this one. You know, just kind of hanging out.
So you're
on
a ton of Enneagram podcasts?
Every last one. No, Rob, no, no. I meant like up until this year, I just kind of been hanging out watching, you know?
Yes, you're a lurker in the Enneagram community.
I'm master lurker.
Yes.
And so, yeah, I just hang out and I listen to a lot of the podcast, and I listen to people's interviews. I find it really fascinating, honestly. And so the way I got into it was I was in school and I was having a breakdown. Things weren't going the way I wanted them to go, you could say. And someone was like, you really should look into the Enneagram because it'll help you understand why you're freaking out right now. And they began to tell me about the Enneagram and what they suspected. And I felt so attacked. I felt like someone was like poking at my core and saying like, you're horrible. You why? And like, I felt seen and it was embarrassing. And I was like, pushing back against it. And then I learned to like, no, that's just you embracing, you know, who you are. And it hurts because it's not just the positive things about you. I think Myers-Briggs comes off a little like you're extroverted and you're intuitive and you like to think and you like to perceive. But the Enneagram will tell you like, no, you're actually kind of not reliable and you can be overbearing and you can be mean sometimes, you know? And so those things are kind of what you hear and you think, I don't like that. So that's kind of how I got into it. Exploration and self-discovery, I guess you will, and just being able to look at myself and say, okay, this is how you're acting. How is that affecting the people around you?
By the way, as an aside, if you're interested in Myers-Briggs, I did an interesting podcast a couple of months ago with Lindsay Resco, where we talked about the Myers-Briggs types of the different survivor players. And we talked about my Myers-Briggs type, which I thought was very interesting, that I was watching a lot of Myers-Briggs YouTube videos after that podcast. So maybe this is going to be the same thing. Maybe you and I are going to run in the same Enneagram circles after this.
Maybe. And I would thank Lindsay because she's the reason why I said, well, Rob, we could talk about the Enneagram, because it's not like I'm walking around with this like Enneagram backpack on ready to wield all of my knowledge to whoever will listen. I just thought that was pretty cool. You seem to get that a lot better than you got the Enneagram. And so we'll give this a try as well.
Okay.
And maybe we can do some community stuff together.
Okay. Chappelle, can we go back to, you were going through a hard time and then somebody referred you to the Enneagram and that really changed things up for you?
Yeah. So it didn't make my time any easier, but I was able to see like why certain things were affecting me and why I was reacting the way I was reacting. And then I was able to say, okay, now calm down, take a step back, breathe and get back to who you are, you know? Because the Enneagram, again, it describes your motivation. It describes why you do certain things. But it also, that those things, you know, affect how you do things as well. And I was acting erratically, I guess I should say. And not in a good way. I'm pretty erratic already, but I was spiraling and didn't even notice it. I thought everything was fine. Everything's cool. And the room was just burning down in the background. So
this is fine. Yeah.
It helped. Everything's fine. This is fine. Yeah. And it was not. So I think I'm better because of it. And I like hearing about other people's Enneagrams as well, because then I can say, oh, okay, now I see why we don't connect, or now I see how I could probably approach this to where you'd understand it a little bit differently.
Okay. All right. So how do we start talking about Enneagrams? Because I've seen it. I know that the chart is a thing. That there's a chart and it looks like a little bit, this looks like this is a satanic symbol, but it's not, right?
No. This is not a pentagram.
Yes.
Yes. Pentagrams have five sides. This has nine, I guess. This is a circle. Mm-hmm. Okay. As far as I'm concerned, this is a circle.
And circle. Line. Yeah.
Yeah. This is a circle with lines in it. So we're not going to connect those lines in like a star or anything like that. We don't want to be offensive to anybody. Mm-hmm. This is a circle for all the listeners. And so imagine the Enneagram, if you haven't Googled it yet, to have a nine at the top and to go clockwise like a clock. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, all the way back to 9.
Right. And so you can't tell time on it like Lunette, right?
You probably, no, definitely not. Mm-hmm. This is not something that you're going to use to tell time. But your orientation of time does come into effect when learning about your Enneagram number and kind of how it affects you. But no, we won't be using it as an actual clock.
Okay. All right. So where do you want to start with explaining the Enneagram?
All right. So you have 9 types of personalities, and they are divided into 3 different types. And I believe Colton covered this pretty well last time. But you have the feelers, the heart type, you know, 2, 3, and 4. You have the thinkers, 5, 6, and 7. And then you have like the gut or like the body type people, you know, who are just they're moved by their urges, I guess. So you got 8, 9, and 1. So
would it be helpful?
Mind, body, and
Chappelle, for people to have the chart open?
If they want to, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, this is, like I said, I'm not going to rely on the chart too much. I just want to talk to you through the personality types.
Yes.
And then when you get to the one that you think is you, and spoiler alert, I don't think you're the same as Bob Crowley. I don't know what Bob Crowley is, but I don't think you're the same as him.
Yeah.
But actually, maybe. But I don't think what Colton was saying.
I don't want to be the same as him, Chappelle.
I hear he's a handsome fellow.
Yeah.
So anyway, so we'll start with the heart triad, 2, 3, and 4. And yes. I will talk you through each of them, and you can ask questions. We'll talk about famous examples of these Enneagram types. That's what I said. We won't just limit this to Survivor if we don't have to. But we could talk about, like, you know, how these people move and think and react to the world around them. And then when we get to, you know, where you think you land, we could talk about that even more. And then we'll just tidy it all up with some, you know, next steps of Enneagram research.
Yeah. Okay. Can I pitch you on who I think what survivors would fit in the Enneagram?
Sure. You can do whatever you want.
Okay.
I'm just here. Okay. So we're going to start with the heart types, right? They are feelers. They are driven by their emotion. It's in the 2, 3, and 4s, right? So every triad has 3 numbers in it. The first of these numbers, we're going to start with 2. 2s are the helpers. I don't know what your chart has them listed as, but a lot of times they're called the helpers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think yours might say helper as well. But 2s are the helpers. These people are generally like caring, generous, demonstrative, people-pleasing type people, right? These people are the ones that they're going to ask how your day is, and they really mean it, right? They really want to know.
Wow.
They're good listeners. They're not just listening to get through the conversation. They are invested in you. They feel outward. So they are always concerned about, you know, how other people feel. So much to where they actually kind of miss how they feel. You know, they, when you're so worried about other people, it's hard to worry about yourself, right? And 2s can tell you what you need all the time, but it's really hard for them to identify what they need. But that's not why they're here. They're here to help. And so they feel like, you know, they can walk in a room and connect with each of us. And a lot of times they can. They come off very like doting and motherly and, you know, like concerned, and they're the person you could cry to because they just they suck you in to their gravity, you know. And so these people, like I said, they're driven to help. They get energized by interactions with other people and by helping people. And so like if you or I are doing a lot of favors, or anybody listening is doing a lot of favors from somebody, it's so draining, right? Like, oh my God, I had to go do this and I had to go do that. 2s love it. They love that feeling of like, I helped this person. Oh my God. And it's almost selfish because they get like energized from that. They live for that. The problem with that is when you're always doing for other people, obviously you can't do for yourself, but you kind of expect that to be reciprocated, you know? So like, mm-hmm. Let's say I just thinking about Rob today, I sent you some Laffy Taffy.
Mm-hmm.
And you like, oh my God, Chappelle, what a great guy. He sent me this Laffy Taffy. And I'm sitting at home thinking, wow, look at that. I really did that for Rob. I bet he loves me. He loves me a lot because I sent him that Laffy Taffy. But then on that dark day when I really want some Laffy Taffy and I don't get it from Rob, I'm not going to call Rob and say, Rob, how dare you? I sent you. But deep down, it's going to kill me. Like, oh my gosh, Rob didn't even give me Laffy Taffy. Like I think about him and Nicole and the kids and their Laffy Taffy urges, and nobody's thinking about mine. And that's the problem with being a 2, right? Is because your biggest, in the Enneagram in general, your biggest strength is your biggest weakness. So the fact that they can give to everybody is great, but they can't give to themselves. And then when they don't get those things in return, even though they're not doing it for a return, they feel like away, right? They feel like almost like martyrs. They get really like, they can kind of get kind of mean sometimes when they get to that point, when they get stressed out. So I generally love twos because they're the ones who are doing for you. They'll give you the shirt off their back. The issue is that sometimes you don't want the shirt off of somebody's back. Exactly. And sometimes you don't want it, right? We just want to be left alone. Well, if you're in a room with a two, you probably won't get that because they're going to question like, are you okay? How are you feeling? You know? And so that's twos. Their basic fear is just of being unwanted and unloved. And they think that doing stuff for people is going to make people love them.
So,
make sense?
Yes. If somebody is, I am that person, do they need to try to figure out how to get past this, or do they have to just accept that in those times when they're feeling like their generosity was unreciprocated, that they just need to say like, oh, wait, no, that I just did those things, that it's fine if I do things, nice things for people, but nobody has to do anything nice for me.
Yeah, that's a good thing for them to understand. It's just because you feel the urge to give to everybody, we are not all twos. As I told you, there's 9 different personality types and there's billions of people here. And, you know, everybody can't be a two. So everybody's not looking at the world like, what can I do for you? And so, yeah, if they take a step back and say, you know, I did that because I wanted to do it and I wanted to do something nice and I'm okay with that, not getting anything back for it, then they're good. I also think they want to make sure that they're just not volunteering for stuff just to volunteer for it, right? So, like, let's say I'm like, Rob, I really need a batch of cookies tomorrow. Man, I need it. And twos love the word need because it's just like, boom, this is my chance, right? And Rob, you don't make cookies. That's not your bag. But you really want to help me because you just need to. Well, now you're up all night making cookies and then you're burning the cookies and you're buying cookies and you're trying to figure out a way to get me these cookies. And I call you the next day like, I don't really need those cookies. I'm good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we changed our mind. Now you put all this energy into something that I didn't even ask you for. And so that's kind of where the twos come in to, like, that's their big flaw, right? Is that they're trying so hard to do for you that they're just overlooking the fact that maybe it's not theirs to do, you know?
How about this? What if I'm in a situation where, okay, I can identify, all right, this person's a helper and they're super nice. Should I try to refuse the help of the helper because I don't want to then ultimately reciprocate? I know I'm going to let this person down. Should I try to then say to this person no? Because I do feel like that this situation does come up where people like want to help me with things, but that I am like sometimes afraid that I'm like, okay, well then what does this person want in return then?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we do this all the time, right? Where someone says, hey, do you need something? You say, no, I'm good. Even though you might need it, you know, you're just like, no, it's fine. And I think that comes to varying degrees too. Like, you know, the person who you could say, yeah, I do need that. And you know, they're going to give it back and it's going to be kind and it's going to be from the heart and they're not going to hold you to it. And I'm not saying that all twos are going to hold you to it. I'm just saying that their default speed is to kind of think that way of like, I'm doing this to you out of the kindness of my heart. And they're always thinking that way. And so, like, let's say they are really trying to get you to like them because twos love to be loved. That's what they're going for, right? And you just aren't you know, picking up what they're putting down. They're going home and they're crying about it because they can't figure it out, you know, like, why doesn't he like me? And then after they finish crying, they're going to get up tomorrow and they're going to try it again because that's kind of like their default setting, you know? And so sometimes if you notice somebody is just like their existence is kind of, you know, impeding on your own, even if they're trying to help you, you got to step up and say, you know, It's fine. We don't have to do that. I think, I don't know a good survivor example of that. I don't even remember who Colton picked. I think he picked Rupert.
Rupert.
I think this has been a long time. So I'm trying really hard to recall this, but he was saying he's caring and is that other, and Colton was on a tribe with him. So maybe he is, but, I think on an island, I guess you would find yourself like, hey, if I needed to, you know, wash my swim trunks.
Yeah.
The person who's like, I got that for you, you know, or every time you get up to grab something, they're like, let me take care of that for you. You know, they're just they're helpers. They're nice. They're loving. They got some edge to them sometimes when they get backed into a corner or when they're feeling like they're not being loved. But generally, those are the people who, I guess, that's how they would manifest itself.
I feel like a Dawn seems like would be the helper.
Yeah, and I avoided saying Dawn for a specific reason, just because she's a mom. And I think moms typically kind of will default to that sometimes. And I think Survivor likes to paint moms like that. Mm. You know, they like to find a mother. And Dawn is she just seems like a very lovely lady on TV. And so, yeah, I could see that. You know, I could definitely see that. that, yeah, if we're talking about caricatures of a two, yeah, go with Don for sure. There are a lot less male twos. And I think a lot of that comes from probably like nature versus nurture type stuff, mm-hmm. like where it's not something that you look for in like typical sociological like masculinity, you know, from this like yeah. society standpoint, right? So you're looking for people who are like going out and hunting and all this other stuff. You're not looking for the person who's like waiting on you or, you know, who's thinking about you. It kind of feels uncomfortable to think about from a male standpoint, I guess, historically. And so you don't see a lot more of those. The Enneagram is going to be a lot of how you're wired, just, you know, based off how you're born. But a lot of all you like deal with the traumas in your life. You know, the Enneagram traits really just come from, hey, you are a whole being, right? We all have traits of all these numbers. But somewhere in life, we realize that being one number gets us far. You know, this is getting us through life. This is our crutch, right? And you start to lean on it, whereas it should just be a part of you. And we all do it. We run into a thing that works for us and we just start to use yeah. it and use it and use it. And that's how you find your Enneagram number.
Yeah. I feel like that's an interesting concept, but I've heard it, you know, explained in different ways. Like people have not a political thing, like a trump card of like, okay, this is the thing that I do. And then in all situations, mm-hmm. I end up pulling this trick because this is the thing I always play.
Yeah. And it becomes just the way you live your life. Mm-hmm. And so twos have realized that, you know, stepping up and helping people, it makes people love them. And they like that a lot. You know, maybe in childhood, they didn't feel like they were getting loved or they weren't enough. And so they felt like doing stuff for people became their way of like proving or gaining that that love that they might have not felt like they were getting when they were little.
Yeah. Is there something that we should be doing if you identify that somebody is a helper in terms of like, yes, because I feel like that you would hurt them to not accept their help. But then mm-hmm. also, like, how do you set the expectation of like, I'm not just because you like, thank you for this, but I cannot reciprocate what you are doing for me.
Yeah. And I mean, we're all human. So I'm sure there is going to be situations where you just don't want the help. You don't feel like being bothered. Mm-hmm. Maybe you don't particularly like this too, you know, and you don't want their help, and that's fine. And you have to say the words and then they have to accept that and grow. And twos, if you're listening to this, everybody doesn't need your help and everybody doesn't want it. I think a lot of people like, I think the TV version of that is like the mother-in-law, right? Who like shows up and she's vacuuming your house and she's cleaning up and she's telling you how to raise the kids. And you're like, why are you doing all this stuff for you? And then you get sick and she's like waiting on you hand and foot, you know, you got the thermometer hanging out your mouth and the little bag on top of your head. I'm thinking like the Flintstones or something. I don't know. And so like, that's like the overbearing too.
Yeah.
And people can be like that. Anybody can act like that. It's just twos kind of get there a lot easier than other people.
Okay. All right. That's the helper.
Yeah, that's the helper. First of our feelers.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
What's next?
All right. The second number we'll deal with are the threes. Threes are, like twos, very emotional, but they don't acknowledge it. They have a lot of feelings, and they just don't know what to do with them. So instead, they have decided that, hey, doing things and accomplishing things and winning makes people like me. Right? Mm-hmm. So threes are fun to talk about for me because in American culture, threes are what we're looking to be, right? You want to be the winner. If you're not first, you're last. And threes wake up in the morning and they feel like that. They have a list of things to do. They're very task oriented because they have so many things to accomplish because feelings of doing things and getting things accomplished that energizes them. They're normally very charismatic. They could talk to people, whether they're introverted or extroverted, they can talk to people and figure out what they can read the room. So like, whereas twos can read a person, like individuals, threes can kind of come into the room and be what you admire or be, you know, somebody likable. They kind of glow. I think people will say they're attractive, but when they say attractive, they mean like they can attract people, you know, they're just not like physically attractive. I'm sure they are too, but whatever. They walk in and they just kind of absorb you into like, oh, look at how great that person is. And they don't have a problem telling you about it either. They are hyper-competitive because they think that winning equals being loved. That is what they're after. They are after your admiration, and they will try to win it at all costs. And we love a good three. We love a good three because that's what we're taught. We're taught to win. We're taught to achieve. We're taught to win awards, all those things. And threes are out here to do it. And so the problem with that is that sometimes when you are so focused on winning, you don't, you know, acknowledge the people that you step on to get there. And like I said, they have a lot of feelings. They just don't know what to do with them. So if you're not acknowledging your feelings, a lot of times you are doing things to hurt other people and you don't even notice it because you're trying to get your way to the top. So that's threes in a nutshell. They're like I said, they're super charismatic because people like charisma. You know, they're just going to form and kind of like mold into like what you need me to be so that you will like me in that moment. Make sense?
Yeah. Do threes like other threes, or do they sort of like repel each other because there can only be one three in any given situation?
No, I think they enjoy the competition as well because they still got to win, right? Mm-hmm. And they also care about image a lot. So if they were bothered by another three, they wouldn't let you see it. You know, they're the kind of people who you think are always put together. They always seem to have it because they can't let you see them sweat. The problem with threes is that doing things, accomplishing tasks, that's not a personality trait. Those are just tasks. They lose sight of who they actually are and what they actually like because they're so busy trying to please everybody. Well, you know, gain everybody's admiration. So it's like, I might really like being lazy and staying at home and watching TV, right? That might be my thing. But if I'm walking to a room and we're all talking about, you know, being a vegan, now I have to be a vegan. And I don't have to just be a vegan. I have to be the best vegan. So I have to tell you about it, one. And I also have to try, like, go and get, like, the vegan outfit, like the tracksuit. So you have to know that I work out all the time, too. And I'm living this lifestyle. And
the vegan outfit is the tracksuit?
I think so.
Yeah. But,
I think so. Yeah. Some Adidas. But yeah, I think they're gonna try to mold into like the picture perfect image of what you think that is, right? Threes are gonna, like, a three would be the valedictorian of the school. Not to say that a two could not be the valedictorian, but a three is gonna work really hard at it if they care about school. Whatever they think is gonna make you admire them, they're gonna try to do that thing. And so that, like I said, they're likable because we like winners. And threes want to win, but they are so competitive. I've met some threes that you can tell they're a three because when they lose, they take it to the heart, right? It's not just a game for them. threes are fun to talk about. I'm glad I'm not a three, just because it sounds exhausting, honestly, to kind of have to win at everything. Don't you think?
That would sound very exhausting of, you know, mm-hmm. that tasks are important, but I feel like that just doing the tasks to do the tasks does not sound super fun.
Yeah. And yeah, just waking up with a to-do list for me, just to where I have to be on it all times. It just sounds exhausting, but that's what they get energized from that. They just lack authenticity. Mm-hmm. And I'm not calling them fake, no more than where I call them twos overbearing. What I'm saying is that they're so busy trying to portray themselves as something that is likable that, you know, you don't even know who you're really talking to sometimes. You're talking to what they want you to believe they are.
Do you feel like a lot of threes get cast for Survivor, or is it more of a rarity? Yeah,
I'm sure this is a, like, reality TV in general is probably like a good place to find some threes because these are people who they want to be seen. They want to be liked. They want to, you know, I'm sure on Big Brother, you probably get a bunch of threes because they want to win, but they also want the engagements. They like the clicks. They like to hear like how great that person is. Yeah, I could see that for sure. I don't know if you could think of any Survivor threes. Like I said, there's probably a ton of them, right?
Well, you know, I'm sort of, it's hard because I feel like that when we're talking about people who are definitely like egotistical, like I can definitely mm-hmm. think of a lot of people, but I don't necessarily, like, for instance, like I think of like Johnny Fairplay as somebody who is like completely like, you know, driven by ego and talking about himself, but mm-hmm. I don't think of him as somebody with like, you know, a million things to do on his to-do list.
Right, right. And that's what I'm saying when it comes to threes. And this is another reason why Colton's podcast really doesn't work is because he's trying to take, you know, these clips and images that we get an edited version of. And you know Johnny Fairplay in real life. Mm-hmm. But he tried to take clips and images that we have and try to, like, talk about these people's core motivations off of, you know, like, several episodes of seeing them, right? I would think Johnny Fairplay it would bother him to kind of be disliked as much as he was and mm-hmm. is sometimes, you know. I've always been a big fan, but I know that, you know, he was loved. People love to hate him mm-hmm. at some point. And I don't know if that would really describe him. But like I said, threes are the kind of people, they just pop onto. Maybe Colby, mm-hmm. you know, he's out here, he's winning. And when he wasn't winning, oh my God, he was miserable and we hated to watch it, right? What was it, Superman in a fat suit? Maybe Kobe would be a good example, but I don't know, right? Because even though, like I said, we can all kind of portray ourselves like this. If I just went off of your season of Survivor, I'd say Rob's a three. You know, you woke up and you would have the episode and you'd have a, I mean, you're charming. So you would have us.
Go on, Chappelle. You know, yes.
Oh, and let's not get on your eyes, please. But no, seriously, we would watch you and then we would watch your journey to the end. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're telling the story of the winner, you're probably going to get a lot of three stories, even if they're not a three.
See, I guess the two things that I'm having difficulty sort of like separating, I kind of feel like that I see this more like in athletics, like the quarterback as being, you hear the story about the, like the winners, like the, like a Tom Brady who is like gonna necessarily like do, you know, do whatever it takes, put whatever into his body he can to make sure that he always ends up being the winner, really hates to lose. Like mm-hmm. I see that as sort of more of a three as opposed to like a lot of the people from Survivor who I do think hate to lose, but I don't necessarily like, are they the types of people who are going to like stop at nothing and do anything to win and also be sort of like very disciplined in terms of like the steps it would take to get there?
Oh yeah. And Tom Brady's probably a great example. I don't know personally to know this for a fact. The Enneagram Institute website, I guess they did the research and they interview a lot of different celebrities and, you know, look at interviews for like, you know, things that these people have said and kind of what they talked about. And I think they've compiled lists of famous or like notable people from each number. And I would be shocked if Tom Brady wasn't on that list. But I know you watched the Last Dance documentary, right? With Michael Jordan. His personality is winning.
Yeah,
that's it. People like him. There's some people who don't like him, but everybody respects him as a winner. Mm-hmm. And that's all he has. That, I mean, it's pretty one note, honestly. What I mean, you watch the whole thing and all you know is this man is going to win. Mm-hmm. If he gets poisoned in Utah, I'm sorry, food poisoning in Utah, he's still going to find a way to win. That's what he does, you know, and people, like I said, and even the documentary paints him in such a positive light. Because he's charming and you want him to win. It's like you're just kind of drawn into that. Now, there are conflicting reports, obviously, about Michael Jordan. But for the most part, that is his personality. I think another good documentary to watch, if you haven't seen, is it Americana, the Taylor Swift documentary on Netflix? Mm-hmm. Taylor Swift is probably a textbook three. Her whole documentary is about how she has this fan base that is pretty much split in half, right? There are some people there on the left and there are people on the right. And Taylor Swift has to decide at some point, okay, am I going to start speaking up politically and maybe isolating half of my team? Or am I just going to keep, you know, raking in all this money from all sides? And she really struggles with that. But every part of her documentary, it's Taylor Swift's to-do list. All the things that she does to make sure that she is liked. And she, when she's not liked, and I mean, she is not liked, she's so polarizing. And it drives her crazy. I mean, it is killing her, that poor girl. And she puts that into her music. And I mean, she's just writing songs. But the thing with threes is that they're accomplished, right? So think about Taylor Swift. She's been a songwriter since she was like 12 years old. Kanye West is snatching awards out of her hand when she was 16. You know, this is not normal behavior. The average person isn't waking up and winning songwriting awards. But threes, they're doing it. Michael Jordan, greatest basketball player of all time. You know a good Survivor 3 that you might not suspect?
Who?
Lisa Welchel.
Lisa Welchel.
Mm-hmm. And I know this to be a fact because I've heard her talk about the Enneagram. And that's another reason why I didn't want to talk about Survivor based off the show. Because on the show, Lisa Welchel doesn't give you like to-do list or accomplishment, right? Lisa Welchel is a child star. She was she is a very shy individual, but when she gets on stage, she just pops.
Yeah.
And then she also got second place on Survivor. She is a published writer. She's a mother. Even on Survivor, she was well liked by the people who weren't on her cast. And even, I mean, on her tribe, but even the people who were on her tribe didn't hate her. They hated Scooping. But you know, she was there. She, you know, she has a lot of two in her. A lot of two traits, three and two are right next to each other on the Enneagram. And so you kind of have traits for both numbers, but you can only be one number. And Lisa Welchel, based off of the interview that I heard and what she said about the Enneagram, she's definitely a three. And it just doesn't come across because she didn't win, mm-hmm. right? So if she had won, maybe they would have shown her when she found Malcolm's idol as somebody who like, oh, yeah, I was helping everybody and doing all the things and I found Malcolm's idol and I'm going to use it to win the game, you know, but she was painted as like, oh, the bumbling lady who just came across it, you know, because she's a mother and she's, you know, a church lady, you know? So yeah, she's a three for sure. That's one I can speak to in certainty.
Can I give you one more that might be outside of the box? How about okay. Chrissy Hofbeck?
Maybe. I think Chrissy is very, very talented. She, I don't know about the wanting to be loved thing by being liked by her doing, because she, and you've talked to Chrissy more than I have, but I know that season probably was really tough for her because she was a very polarizing figure as well in Survivor. What leads you to think that she's a three?
I just think that she seems like very driven and accomplished and somebody who would really like hate to lose and also be like really, and I think she's talked about this at times in certain things like her TED talk of just wanting to be, you know, successful and, you know, achieve. Even like, you know, she wrote a book about like finding the right conditions to win. And so I think that she's somebody that would also like really strive to, you know, be as accomplished as possible.
Yeah, I can see that. And I just looked up the Enneagram Institute list of threes, right?
Yes.
And let's just throw out a few of them. So you got Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yes, thank you, Chappelle, for mentioning me in Enneagram. My cousin Patrick is not one of the threes.
Okay, cool. Will Smith, Demi Moore, Reese Witherspoon. If any of the listeners are familiar with Glee, Rachel Berry is a three. Mm-hmm. Rob, you're not very familiar with Glee, right?
No.
Rachel Berry's whole being is being a star. That's what she wants. That's what she wants more than anything. And she doesn't care how she's going to get there. She has to get there. She has to be a star. She has to be seen. And that's her whole being. Lady Gaga is listed on here as a three. Taylor Swift is on here. So look at that. Look, I did pretty well. I think they have Tom Cruise listed on here, Andy Warhol, Muhammad Ali, you know, some winners,
yeah.
Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
Yeah. These are people who, like, they're just well-liked. I don't think I named one person who people are like, I don't like that guy. Maybe Taylor Swift, but I like T-Swizzle. So maybe I just am a little biased.
Okay.
So does that make you feel good about threes? You feel like you got that?
Sure. Are you going to tell us? No, I don't think so. Are you going to tell us what Enneagram you are when we get there?
Not when we get there, but I will talk to you about. End. Yeah, we'll talk about hours later.
Okay.
All right. Cool. So
when you say hours, you feel like we're the same one?
No.
Oh.
No.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I have a suspicion, but I won't try to. I won't spoil that for you because I don't want to paint the way you look at, you know, the Enneagram. This is a story of exploration. You know, you're supposed to be looking inwardly and saying, yeah, these are things that motivate me. It's hard for threes to acknowledge that they're a three because they feel seen. They feel like, oh my God, he's right. Whereas I'm talking about, look how great they portray themselves. What they're hearing is, oh my God, they can tell that I'm putting on an act, you know, or that what am I? They start to think like, what do I like? What are my interests as opposed to winning? Winning is not an interest. It's just not. You have to figure out what it is that you actually like and be authentic to your true self.
Okay.
Yeah. So you ready for the next number?
Ready.
All right. Fours. Fours are the individualist. Some people call them the romantic. Fours are the last of the feelers, the in the heart triad. And whereas threes don't know what to do with their emotions and twos emotions are, you know, aimed at you and like, you know, outwardly toward other people. Fours are completely inward. They are just completely engulfed in their own emotions and how they feel. Fours are typically looked at like almost like bleeding hearts of emotion, because they have a range of emotion that can go from really, really happy to really, really sad in the drop of a hat. If you're telling a sad story, a four can cry. And if you're and then seconds later, they can be happy. I have a friend who I talk to regularly and she is a four. And before she gets home from work, she can call and tell me a story about how she hates somebody at work and be in full tears. And then by the time she gets home, we're laughing about Big Brother, you know, and it doesn't drain her at all. It's just something that she goes through. And it's normal for her. They do really well in grief for some reason. Sadness, like being melancholy, that kind of gets them going, you know, whereas that sounds like, why would you want to do that? Why would you want to sit in that emotion? Fours are good for grief because they're really authentic. They're their true selves all the time. And they expect that from other people. And so grief is a real part of life and they have learned to just sit in it. You know, they are dramatic, self-absorbed, but they're very expressive. A lot of artists will be fours because, you know, they have all these feelings and then they put it on the canvas, you know, and it comes out as beautiful paintings, or they play the piano and it comes out beautifully. And that it just kind of manifests itself like that. Fours are different. there are very few fours in comparison to the other numbers in Enneagram. I think there are less fours, typical Enneagram wisdom says. It's probably because they're so introverted. A lot of times they're withdrawn. You know, they, like I said, they have a lot of feelings and nobody likes that, you know, to be surrounded by somebody who's always so draining with feelings, you know? So I think fours have kind of identified like, oh God, that's a lot for some people. Mm-hmm. And so they kind of go into their own shell and be in their own head and their own heart about what they like. And they're just kind of like emotionally honest. Make sense?
Yeah, I just think that's very interesting to have that combination of like very expressive emotionally, but then also introverted. Like I would think that in my mind, just thinking about like somebody who would be, you know, very expressive emotionally, I would think of them as very extroverted. But that's an interesting distinction of that they are really in touch with what they're feeling so much to the point where they're not necessarily experiencing it with other people and sharing it with them.
Exactly. They're experiencing this inside. So they don't have to be extroverted, right? Because they have this, all this stuff worked up inside of them and they're exploring that. A key characteristic of fours is that they feel like they're missing something in life. Like everybody has just something that they can't quite put their finger on. Like if I took you to the candy store and I told you you could pick whatever candy you want, four might say, I don't really have the candy I want. It's like, well, what do you want? There's everything in here. And they're like, yeah, but I don't want something else. You know, it's like this nagging sound. It's just like, what? Why do you have this that I don't have? You know, fours are also, since they like to be different, they like to stand in their uniqueness. And so a lot of times I think the caricature of a four is kind of like the goth emo kid in the class, right? Who's like sitting in the back and he's got like the purple hair and the nose rings and stuff, just trying to stand out because he's so different and they're embracing it, you know? So they have a real issue with other people who just won't embrace who they are, you know, or is it okay embracing themselves, but they can't trust you if you're not authentic. And like I said, they're the type that will cry and not be drained by it. You know, they just kind of bounce back. That's something that doesn't affect them. If they get sad, they like to listen to sad music. Rob, you ever like get in a really emotional state and you're like, I really want to just be sadder?
No,
exactly. Fours are like, I am miserable right now. Let me go listen to, you know, the saddest of sad songs and let me go and cry by the piano. Very dramatic, you know, but they have these really romantic images or like thoughts in their head, too, where they kind of see everybody in the world as like characters like, oh, well, you know, that lady at work, she's so horrible. And she's like my evil stepsister, da, 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 you know, that kind of thing. And they also are able to kind of look at those people and navigate them, even though they have this, you know, this very vivid image of, you know, what life kind of is from their point of view. So whereas you might see people as people, they might see people as, this is the most horrible person I've ever seen in my life, or this is the nicest lady I've ever known. And, you know, it's very extreme. And I think I'm missing something. Wait a second. So extreme emotions, caricatures, I think, yeah, that covers the like tip of the iceberg for fours because they're so complicated. They're very complex people and they like it, but it just feels like they're always yearning for something else.
So what would you say is their sort of like a thing that they really lean on in, you know, most situations?
Just their authenticity, you know, in most situations, they keep it real, and it doesn't have to be like in your face telling you about you, but they just don't do well with, you know, with not being true to themselves. Some good fours based off this list, Johnny Depp, you know, I remember I said,
he kept it too real.
Some would say that. Yeah. Kat Von D, the tattoo artist, yes. Chris Angel, Amy Winehouse, catch my drift. These are like they stand out, you know? And I think, what was that? Maybe like Big Wendy. She stands out.
Yes, that's all I was going to say. Person. Big Wendy.
Flicka, maybe. Mm-hmm. It kind of stands out. Yeah. But like I said, I don't know these people's motivation. Maybe they just felt like dressing like that. Maybe they thought it'd make them look cool. But for fours, their whole being is being different. And like I said, it's just, they're very misunderstood people because you think like, how do you go through this range of emotions at one time? And they think this is normal. This is life. Like I can be sad because it's a sad thing to happen. Oh, they're also very good with words. They can paint a picture. like nobody's business, a word picture, you know, because they have all these emotions and they can put a name to the things they're feeling. So whereas I'm like, this person's happy, this person's sad, they're like, oh, melancholy and oh, dramatic. And, all, you know, they kind of lean into words of expression because they feel it and they can, you know, kind of show you, they let you into their world a little bit. Yeah, I think some other good fours on here. Bob Dylan, Cher, Stevie mm-hmm. Nicks.
I would feel like a lot of artists are here.
Oh, yeah. Prince. Look at Prince. Mm-hmm. He's purple. He's wearing heels. He's got assless chaps on. Can I say assless?
Yeah.
He's got assless chaps yeah. on. You know, that is a different person. And he's fine with it. He changed his name, the artist formerly known as Prince. Then he changed it back. And then it was just a symbol. Mm-hmm. You know, like, he's very different. And he's a beautiful musician. And he's very withdrawn. People don't know a lot about Prince, right? Even when he passed away, people were like, well, what was happening? Mm-hmm. Where has he been? He had just been on Twitter for like a year. That was the most active he had been, you know, socially. So yeah, those are the ones. I think Sarah McLachlan's on the list.
Oh yeah.
I bet when she gets sad, she listens to sad music and watches puppy videos.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, those are our fours. You got any questions about the fours?
No, I think I get it.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of like pop culture fours, right? Like maybe if I was doing like Winnie the Pooh, I'd say maybe Eeyore is a four, right? Because
yeah.
he just kind of can sit in that melancholy mode and not really have to come out of that. He's fine.
Yeah. I kind of feel like that a lot of fours are probably like, are not looking for celebrity in terms of like where number three would be somebody who's like seeking out that type of fame. I feel like that for a four who's consumed by, you know, keeping it real and being authentic and not being fake, I feel like that they would not necessarily be as attracted to the trappings of fame.
Yeah, because they're authentic in that way, right? So maybe it's not fame that they want, but again, they still have romantic thoughts of what could be. So they're probably thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to make it and I'm going to have all the lights on me and people are going to love me and I'm going to walk in, they're going to adore me, I'm going to have beautiful like curtains in my house and like the tapestries and, you know, so that stuff can get to all of us. Again, we all have a little bit of all of this in us. This is just the one that they've leaned on the most.
Okay, all right. Chappelle, before we get to the next type of person, can we mm-hmm. take a moment and thank a sponsor?
Sure.
Okay. I know fitness is important to you, Chappelle. I know that you're mm-hmm. that you're out there on the Insta going to your training, but there's another way, Chappelle. Beachbody on Demand, because they have got a great offer for our listeners, a free trial membership that you could try out Beachbody on Demand in the comfort of your home. Just text RHAP to 30 30 30. Of course, Beachbody on Demand, they are helping you. You have to wait until the new year that you can get started, as the holidays are creeping up on getting in shape. The, you know, the quarantine 15 is a thing, Chappelle.
Yeah, I've met it.
Yeah. And Beachbody on Demand can help you with your fitness goals, even surviving the most tempting holiday dinner and desserts that are out there. Because Beachbody on Demand, the company behind P90X, Insanity, 21 Day Fix, they've got new programs like Muscle Burns Fat and 80 Day Obsession with your favorite trainers, Tony Horton, Joel Freeman, that's my guy, Autumn Calabrese. They've got the best programs around for bodybuilding, weight training, cardio, yoga, high intensity interval training, even dance workouts. You work out in as short as 10 minutes a day that don't require a ton of extra equipment. In the time it would take you to drive and park at the gym, you could be finished working out. You could access the program anytime, anywhere on your computer, web-enabled TV, tablet, smartphone, Roku, Apple TV, Chromecast, and more. And of course, you can try it for free. I like Lift 4. It's a good setup there, where you're doing a couple of days of lifting, a couple of days with the high intensity interval training with Joel. You're going to want to get on board with this great offer. Text RHAP to 30 30 30 and get that special free trial membership. You'll get full access to the entire platform, all the workouts, nutritional information, and support absolutely free. Just text RHAP to 30 30-30 for Beachbody on demand. All right. You don't have to be an achiever to do that, Chappelle.
No. You said you are not an achiever. And I've seen your home gym now. I was in your garage earlier.
Yes.
And yeah, you got a good setup. So I think you're good.
I got a lot of stuff. Okay. But you don't need a lot of stuff for the Beachbody on demand. You can do body weight exercises. They got something for everybody. Okay. All right. Where are we going now? The thinkers.
Yeah. So we're going to go to the thinking triad. These are cerebral types, you know, but they're primary like way of perceiving the world is through their thoughts first. And so you have 5, 6, and 7. A good thing to note about the thinkers is that their primary motivation is fear. So they're afraid of things. And so they think about it and then it processes and then they, you know, they kind of present themselves in these ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so we will start with 5. I don't know are you looking at your chart? What is 5 called on there? Is it the investigator?
I'm seeing the investigator.
Yeah, I prefer the observer. Observer. You know, but I am no professional at this. I'm just talking. 5s are...
You sound very professional about this.
Thanks. I try to. That's great. I know people are going to eat me up in the comments, but this is fun.
No, we got rid of the comments.
Oh, well, never mind then. This is great then.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm consummate professional. Okay. So... 5s. 5s are investigators. They are, like I said, cerebral types for sure. But their thing is that the world is scary and they don't know what's out there. And so in order to face the world, they are going to learn as much as they can about it, right? They are going to research and they're going to investigate and they're going to make charts and they're going to make graphs and they are going to just hoard knowledge because they don't want to go outside. Because outside is scary and I can't go outside until I have all the things in my head. Right. And so I find in my life that the 5s are the type of people who have like the 12 like pages of Google open up and they're just constantly going through them. And when you ask them a question before they answer, they'll take a little bit longer, you know, because they want to make sure that they're correct or they want to make sure that they have all the information. A 5's biggest fear is being incompetent. They don't want to be in a situation where they don't know what they need to know to succeed, right? Or to be safe, I guess I should say. So 5s spend their time researching. And they feel like almost like researching is the same as doing something. Mm-hmm. So let me tell you a story. Let's say I said, hey, we really need to build this bookshelf. And I tell a 3 to build the bookshelf. The 3 is going to go out and they're going to go buy the wood and the hammer and the nails and all the stuff. They're going to come back. They're going to build the bookshelf and it's going to be done. And they're going to hand it to you and say, look what I did. And it might be the ugliest bookshelf ever, but they got it done. They won. They succeeded, right? If you tell a 5 to build that same bookshelf, the 5 is going to say, okay, well, let me look at what kind of wood I'm going to need. Okay. This kind of wood is a... Okay, I think they recalled this kind of wood in 1964, so probably not going to go with this one, but I might still get it because, you know, it still looked like it's useful. I don't know. Maybe I'll just put that over here. Well, let me go look at the nails. Now, these kind of nails are one type, but then these nails are a little sturdier, but they're more expensive. And then 6 months later, you're still waiting on your bookshelf. But the 5 has like, look at all the research. I've gotten all the knowledge together. But they haven't done the thing, right? They haven't done it. It's really hard for them to take action without feeling like they are ready, you know, like they've done the necessary research. And so, like I said, they come off as cerebral types because they are. They're just in their heads about it. Not to say they're smarter than anybody else, but just they have to feel like they are prepared for whatever. And so they want to research it to the point where, like I said, it could end up in spreadsheets. It could end up just, you know, files in their head. It's... Their goal is to be seen as capable, you know?
Yeah. Sounds exhausting.
Doesn't it? But you know, researching isn't that hard actually. You know, you could Google something right now, right? Mm-hmm. And for the 5s listening, they're Googling it. They looked this up. So when they heard me talking about 5s, if they hadn't already been looking it up, oh, they're looking it up. And they took the quiz too. There's an Enneagram quiz. I just blew past that because the quiz really doesn't do any justice because the quiz doesn't know you, right? We're talking about your motivations. If the quiz says, do you like to go outside? You like to be inside? Sure, we all like to be inside sometimes. We like to be outside sometimes. But the Enneagram is saying, to your core, how do you feel when someone asks you a question? Does that make you want to think some more? And for a five, oh yeah, they want to think about it. Mm-hmm. And so they're at home right now, Rob, and they're listening to this and they are Googling away. And they're trying to figure out, how do you know this about me? Mm-hmm. Because they want to understand things, you know, and the world is scary. And fives see that. And they're not ready to jump out there until they feel well equipped.
Yeah. So yeah. In the Colton podcast that he had me mm-hmm. as a five, and I would say that fear is a huge motivation for me. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't say that necessarily like I spend most of my time researching, and I definitely don't work on a lot of charts.
Right. And you have a long social battery. You can talk to people all day.
Yeah.
I mean, it's your job. Don't get me wrong, but you have no issue with that. Fives have a very short social battery, or I'll say limited, because you can be an extroverted five. But the way fives look at the day is that they wake up in the morning and I have a battery life of 100%. And I have 12 things I need to do before I get to 10. And by 10, I need to be going home because I need to recharge and I need to, you know, go back into my shell and I need to do more research. And so they're looking at the day as, how much can I get done before I hit this battery life? Because once I get it done, I'm out of here. Mm-hmm. And a five is the type of person to leave the function and not tell you. Like when I say they're out of there, they are gone.
Can you be more than one Enneagram, or are you sort of like, no, this is what you are and you are locked in. You are one thing.
Yeah, you're one thing. So here's the thing. You are one number. You will always be one number and it cannot change. I think Myers-Briggs, you can actually change because based off of your environment, you know, but I think what it comes back to here is your core motivation. So even if you're in a situation where you can't do all the research, let's say you're a five and you don't have a computer and you don't have a book and you're stuck with, you know, with me all day and I'm just talking your ear off, you know, they're probably driving them crazy, but they can do it. You know, now mm-hmm. once they finally get away from me, Jesus, they're going to go research. When they get back to what they can, they're going to go back into that mode. You know, they're always going to default. And let's just say we're all of the numbers. We're all, you know, we're all whole humans. But for them, that just kind of that researching part that energizes them. That gives them the will to go out into the real, you know, into the world and tackle all the tough things in life.
I do tend to have a lot of tabs open.
Yeah, but you got a lot of stuff going on, too.
A lot of stuff going on. A lot of stuff that I like, looking at that, that seems like a lot of work. Or I'll come back to that later.
Yeah, fives are the people who made it to like the fourth or fifth page on the Google search.
Mm,
you know, listen, if you don't get it in the first three or four, then we Googled the wrong thing. But fives, they're like on the next page. They're two, three pages in. They're checking the resources, resources in the back, you know. So that's a five for you.
Yeah.
But like I said, typically they're withdrawn like fours.
Right.
They are.
Yeah.
But again, when the numbers are next to each other on the chart, they have traits of each, right? Mm-hmm. So fives, you can be a five and be, you know, closer to four in like the way you perceive the world. But at the end of the day, you are going to go back to that investigative researching person that you are.
Yeah. I feel like that I could see Steven as more of a five. What do you think of that?
I don't know Steven's research habits, but I do have an idea of what I think Steven is, and we haven't gotten there yet.
Okay. I feel like it's maybe Cochrane also.
Maybe. Cochrane's a good one to think about because Cochrane is reclusive.
Mm-hmm.
And fives a lot of times are because they have to be prepared to go out into the real world. And I remember listening to you talk to Cochrane, and he'll be like, I haven't left my house. I've mm-hmm. been eating pizza and Cheetos or something like all day. And, you know, I haven't mm-hmm. seen any humans. But then when he comes out, he's fine. The question is, where's Cochrane now? And so I think that's a good example. I'm looking at this list of famous fives. And of course, you have your Bill Gates and your Mark Zuckerbergs. But you also have Dr. House from House.
Mm-hmm.
He's not that's another thing about fives. They're not warm, cuddly people a lot of times. Because like I said, people take a lot of energy. Emotion takes a lot of energy and they only have so much and they have to be ready, you know, in case something happens. So they don't have a lot to give to. And I found some of my favorite people are fives, but it's definitely you have to understand that they need their time.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were talking about how you can approach twos knowing that they might be, you know, helpers. I think approaching fives is knowing that even though they might come off a little prickly, come off a little standoffish, that they like people. You just have to let them come to you on their own time, you know? And when they're good to be around, they're people that you can tell a five anything and they're never going to get out because they're very selfish with their own information. You know, they're not going to tell you a lot about their life. That's why I said probably not Steven, because Steven's kind of, you know, he talks freely pretty much on podcasts and stuff like that. But a five is the type of person to have, you know something about me and this person knows something about me. And I can never let you two people link up because I don't want y'all having too much information about me.
Yeah.
So I'm looking again. Jodie Foster is listed on here as a five. Let's see. Tim Burton, Stephen King, Emily Dickinson, Vincent Van Gogh, Albert Einstein. So yeah, brain types, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. What you think?
These are like our Ravenclaws?
Nah, as a Slytherin, I try to not pigeonhole people into lesser houses.
Okay.
Yeah. But sure. Whatever. Okay. You want to give Ravenclaws that kind of clout, fine. But yeah, that's how fives are. They just like to be prepared. And they like to arm themselves with, their armor is knowledge.
Okay. All right.
Sound good?
That sounds good. Let's talk about six.
All right. Six is where I think Steven might lie.
Yes.
Sixes are called, what are they called in your chart?
The loyalist.
All right. Let's talk about Mr. Fishback.
Yes.
So from what we know about Survivor, we know he was loyal to JT.
Yes.
And that didn't work out great, but they are still great friends. You know, he was loyal to Jeremy. That didn't work out great. Mm-hmm. He's pretty loyal to you, Rob, it seems. You know, you kind of, he doesn't get too far, you know.
Yeah.
You got Steven. Mm-hmm. But they're called the loyalists, but I don't really think that's the biggest personality type. Like that's not the biggest indicator for sixes for me. Sixes, like fives, are afraid, but their fear is more like anxiety. Okay. And so it's a constant anxiety. So Rob, what if I told you that there are people in the world who always wake up and say, what if something bad happens? What if this happens? What if that happens? What if it rains? What if it's snowing outside? What if the tornado hits? What if the lights go out? You know, they default to that line of thinking. It's kind of always in their head, like a cyclone of just thoughts of what if this happens? What if that happens? They are super reliable people. They are hardworking. They are responsible. They are trustworthy. But they are good troubleshooters because they're always thinking about what could go wrong.
Yes.
So whereas fives are like, let me get the knowledge and I'm fine. Sixes are never fine because they are always thinking about what can go wrong. Okay. It's kind of like that's their go-to. I don't know who Colton picked as their survivor version of a six, but I think sixes are hard to place because there's so many of them. Half the world by Enneagram, popular Enneagram like knowledge is a six.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they are, it's normal to wonder what could go wrong, right?
Think about it all the time.
Six parents will typically look like, well, make sure you don't talk to strangers and make sure you wash your hands. But you know, we all have those thoughts, but sixes have that thought all the time, you know, to the point where it can kind of be debilitating. Like they, like fives, they think that their line of thinking is almost like doing, like, oh my gosh, I'm thinking about all the things that could go wrong. It's like, well, when are you going to do the thing? When are you going to step out on that ledge, my friend? You know, I would understand. But sixes, they just don't get it. They are constantly questioning themselves. They have an interesting feeling about authority. So sixes are the type of person who could tell you who's in charge at all times. They can tell you who's in charge in the room because they need to be able to blame somebody when it goes wrong. Mm-hmm. But they also need to be able to lean on somebody for things to go right. So it's like, if I'm a six and I'm afraid of bad things happening, I want to follow the rules, right? There are rules set in place. And if I follow the rules, everything will be okay. And if they're not okay, who made the rules? Who's that guy? You know, there are two types of sixes. Sixes is the only number of Enneagram where you can just divide it in two. And they actually kind of merge into each other. So at any given time in your life, you can be this kind of six or that kind of six. If you're a six, it's just kind of like there are two switches. Phobic sixes are sixes that are afraid of the thing and they won't do the thing, right? They see it, they're terrified. They like, oh, I need to go to Walmart, but there are so many people in there and I don't care. They have masks on, but I just can't, you know, I can't do it. It's just not safe. You know, they won't go in there. A counterphobic six is the type of person who has that same fear, but they're rebellious and they will go in there anyway and they will be terrified, but they'll do the thing. And six is kind of like, they range in that their whole life. You know, kind of, some people say half their life, they're one way, half their life, the other way. But I've heard interviews where people have said, no, I'm fine until XYZ happens. And then I'm boom, the other way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, any sixes? Do you think Steven is a six?
Yeah, I mean, I could see that, you know. You know, I feel like that there's a lot of different factors there to include into it in terms of like everything that we're talking about.
Yeah, they want to feel security. They want to feel safe.
I'm trying
to
figure out if I am a six.
I mean, how do you feel about that? Listen, you started thinking about five.
Yeah.
And you say, huh, this sounds kind of familiar. And five is right next to six. And now you're like, huh, okay. So let's say you think you want to be a six, right?
Mm-hmm.
So things you need to know about six is that they're always imagining, planning for the worst. They got kind of a pessimistic spirit about them. They don't trust people who are in authority, but they need people who to be in authority, right?
Mm-hmm.
People say they're loyal and understanding and compassionate, and most of their friends don't. They just feel like most of their friends don't have as much anxiety as they do. They're always kind of like, well, why aren't you afraid of this?
Mm-hmm.
Why doesn't that bother you? Why are you so comfortable doing these things that you're doing? They act quickly in a crisis. Like, you can count on a six to jump when it's time. They're gonna take that leap. But then afterwards, they like have the breakdown. let's see. They always want to be sure they've made the right decision.
Yeah,
but it's almost impossible to do that, right? So that's their paradox, right? You want to be right, but there's certainty is something that is not promised, and they're always in the search for certainty.
Mm-hmm.
And that sucks because it's exhausting to kind of think, well, what if this happens? And people want you to relax. And you're like, I can't relax because the things might happen.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a six for you in a nutshell. They're not comfortable with extremes a lot because when things are extreme, they can go wrong.
Mm-hmm. Like what kind of extremes?
Like, let's say a six wouldn't like to be the best at anything.
Yeah.
Because when things start to get too good, I mean, sometimes they're going to go bad, right? And so they're kind of like on pins and needles waiting for the ball to drop, waiting to find out that, oh God, this isn't, oh no, they found me out, or, you know, maybe I'm not as good, or they start to question things, even in relationships. When they are in a relationship and everything is going great, they start thinking, well, why do you really like me? Like, what is it that's keeping you here? What am I doing? And if I change a little bit, were you going to not like me anymore? And people will see that in them and tell them like, hey, relax, stop being so pessimistic, you're great. But they don't really trust people who give them too many compliments. They don't trust themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you don't trust yourself, it's hard to trust other people. And sixes have trust issues. And so that's the mark of a six. And like I said, you could have six traits. You could be a five and just really be in touch with that sixness of it all. But if you are a six, you know that feeling of, well, why don't people care? You know, why aren't people as nervous as I am?
Mm-hmm.
So you might stew on that if you think you might be a six.
Yeah. All right. Let me think about that a little bit more. I feel like there's some things that are really making sense and other things I'm like, not as much.
Okay. Well, what's not making sense?
I feel like that, you know, the search for certainty, I can relate to that. I feel like that I never quite really can say like, okay, is this what I'm supposed to be doing? Is this right?
Yeah. So that's not the same as a search for safety though, right? Like for certainty and like security.
Mm-hmm.
That's more like, am I doing the right thing morally?
Yeah.
Sixes are more like, am I going to be okay?
Mm-hmm.
Is everything going to be fine?
Yeah. I ask that question a lot too, Chappelle.
Yeah. That's a good question to ask. I think we should all ask that question.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, I don't think you're a six.
Okay.
But
all right,
if you are a six,
you're the expert. You're the expert.
I am not the expert. Stop this. People are listening. Gosh. Did I tell you about your eyes? I mean, they're really beautiful. Mm-hmm. Don't do that.
Yes.
So yeah, let's change the subject.
Okay.
Are you ready to move? Well, we didn't talk about like notable sixes.
Notable
we talked
sixes,
about
yeah.
Fishbacks. He's notable. Okay. Let's look at notable sixes.
I do feel like
George
that.
Costanza.
Okay. Yes.
Yes.
I was going to say that. I do feel like that Steven is like more neurotic than I am.
Mm-hmm. And that's a very neurotic type. What about, how do you feel about George Costanza being a six?
I don't know. The George Costanza is a very broken man.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of on the brand for Seinfeld, for what I understand. Like they're all kind of pieces.
Who
of people.
Who else you got?
let's see. The list says Julia Roberts, Ellen Page, Diane Keaton, Paul Rudd, Ellen DeGeneres. I can see that. She's got shifty eyes. David Letterman, Andy Rooney, Mark Twain, George H.W. Bush, Melissa Etheridge, Eminem, Oliver Stone, Michael Moore, a ton of people, Spike Lee. And I think none of these people
say that
can
George H.W. Bush and Eminem, I feel like, are pretty similar.
They probably see the world in a very, they perceive the world in a very similar way, but their actions don't have to dictate that. Right. Mm-hmm. Like I said, you can be the valedictorian and be a six. It's probably just a little bit more stressful than it is for a three. Right. Or you could be the valedictorian and be a five because you have all the information and your research and everything and you want it, you know, so you can accomplish the same things and be a different number, which is why I wasn't so ready to write off five for you when Colton said you were like Bob Crowley, because if he's basing it off y'all's games, then no. But also if he's basing it off of what he knows about you, then I wouldn't have said you were a five. But something that we should think about. Right.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Are you okay with moving forward?
Yes.
You got more questions about sixes?
No, I'm good.
All right. So now we're going to talk about sevens. On your chart, it probably says the enthusiast.
Yeah, so
the
I have two different tabs open now. So they called the last one the loyalist, but they also called it the troubleshooter. And I noticed that you said that word troubleshooter as well.
Yeah. That's the what if of it all, right? Like, if you, they're good in analytical jobs because their job is to find out what's wrong with this.
Yeah.
And that's where they look at the world. That's their, that is how they see everything. So they're like, oh, this is my bread and butter. You know, tell me how I can tell you how this is going to go wrong for sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So what you got for seven on your chart?
I see on both of these tabs of the enthusiast.
Oh, sounds like that's the one.
Yeah.
Okay. So sevens are busy. They're variety seeking thinkers. And so whereas fives think and they become reclusive, because they have to just bring in their, you know, they have to bring in as much knowledge before they can go out, and then they have to go back inside and do that all over again. And sixes are always saying, what if something happens? What if something happens? What if something happens? Sevens are always thinking about the future. They're always thinking about what's the next cool thing that I can do to distract me from my fear.
Mm-hmm.
And sevens fear pain. So sevens are the type of person that you look at, and they do not look fearful at all. They kind of come off actually kind of fearless. Because you see the exuberance and the enthusiasm that they have for life and all the things that they're doing. But they're just doing that so they don't have to face the hard stuff in life.
Mm.
So whereas fours can just sit in sadness, there is not a seven on this planet that can sit in sadness. It just doesn't happen. They get sad and they think about ways to make themselves happy. And if that takes, you know, oh, well, I need to go and call my best friend and we can laugh about something, or I need to go binge watch this TV show, or I need to go to the, you know, whatever. I need to do this. I need to go on this trip. Sevens are always in motion because of their thoughts. They're thinking and then they go do the thing because it sounds so exciting in their head. So they got to try it. And so they're avoiding a lot of pain. They're avoiding, and they can tell you about their pain too, with like almost with a smile on their face, because in their mind, they've reframed it to not be so bad. Because it pains too hard for them. So they just lean into happiness and fun and optimism. So the way sixes see things as a pessimist, sevens are the opposite way. They always think, well, that's not so bad because you could just do this. Or, well, it could be worse, but there's this still. And wouldn't it be exciting if we did this? I know it's COVID and the sevens somewhere are struggling probably because they're probably looking at ways to kind of fill in their time rather than just sitting in how depressing, you know, this time could be for some people. They are scattered. They're unreliable, but just not in action, more like at their core, the way they see the world. They would like to be reliable, but it's really hard to commit to helping you if I've committed to 19 other things because I'm just the person who's having all the fun, right? So people are like, come to my party. And they're like, I'll get back to you because what if something better comes along? You know, they're that person. They just find an exuberance in life and they use that to fill up all of their, like, the emptiness. But again, that's not how life works. There's light and there's dark, and they have to sit in the dark. And it's just really hard for sevens to do that.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
So basically that they just move on from, like, okay, this is a painful thing to think about or to sit with this part of my life. So I'm just going to distract myself and do something different and not really address the sort of like underlying thing that's happening.
Yeah. And they're like that with everything. I'm talking about with everything. It's like a light switch. So it's kind of like when the need or like a meter. So like when the needle starts to go to not happy, they go right back to happy. And so they don't know that other people sit in sadness and they don't understand why, you know, because in their minds, like, well, if you're not happy, why don't you go get happy? they're gluttonous. It's like their thing is to have, they want so much of everything. So much of whatever it is, I want more, I want more, I want more. Why? Because if everything is filled up, then I don't have to, you know, acknowledge the things that aren't there, the pain, all that stuff. I just want to keep stacking experiences and stuff on top of it. They are jacks of all trades. They've seen it all. They've been there. They've talked about it. They've, because they're always in everything. They're just everywhere. They're just trying to take in as much stuff, anything to distract them from, you know, what's probably most important, which is, you know, feelings and being, you know, present for people. They're just not, they're not good at it.
Hmm.
Thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that I can relate to parts of that also. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is, this is tricky now as I'm trying to figure out what I am. I definitely feel like I don't dwell in sadness. I feel like that, if something is unpleasant, I say, well, just better not think about that anymore and move on to another thing where, you know, that's something that I certainly talk about with my wife who, can be like, okay, something's bothering her, she's going to stick with that a little bit more. But I feel like that if something is bothering me, a lot of times I will say, okay, well, let me just try to move on, and that's not a fun thing to be thinking about. I also have things that I cannot get over that happened to me also, Chappelle, so I'm very confused.
No, it's fine. I'm not accusing you of being a seven at all. I'm just saying that, you know, that's how their default tombs, right? So you might have to make the conscious effort to say, you know what? I'm not dealing with this. I choose happiness. Sevens don't have to make that conscious effort. They do it automatically. So where you would think, oh my God, that's devastating. They're devastated too in that moment. And then seconds later or minutes later, or however long it takes, they're out of it. And they don't have to sit down and say, what can I do to make myself happy? Their mind just defaults to, I'm looking for the happy thing. I'm looking for the fun. I'm looking for some entertainment. Sevens are obsessed with other people's lives. Colton said he was a seven. And this makes a lot of sense because sevens don't like to be trapped in anything because they want to be out and they want to view, they want to, you know, indulge in everything that's around them.
See, so I don't want to be out.
Right. Yeah. You don't want to be out. Colton was on an island and he did not have a good time. And he is very much, if he is a seven, as he says, then that means he felt trapped. And he stressed out about it. And then he started to act not like himself, which is normally kind of bubbly and upbeat, according to, you know, Enneagram language. And he got there and he got to the point where the people weren't doing what he wanted to do the way he wanted to do it. And he wasn't having a good time. And so he quit. And it's tough for sevens because they hate being trapped. And I mean, I don't think, you know, being on the island for Colton, that ended up without Caleb, I think is how it ended up being trapped. Right. You know, had Caleb been there, I think he'd been fine. You know, you saw how he was the first time, I guess, kind of. He seemed to be having a good time. But he did. Yeah, those sevens are good for taking their ball and going home. But they're also, they bring so much exuberance to the room that if they're not having a good time, you kind of feel it. They're the type of person where you're like, well, it was fun until you stopped talking. You know? And now it's like, well, why are you not talking? What's wrong? And so they're not allowed to kind of not be having a good time. I've heard like what sevens will say, like, oh, well, I went to a funeral and I slept through it. And even though they really cared about the person who was there, they just couldn't be present in that, you know? And so they defaulted to sleep. Now, don't get me wrong. They probably regret sleeping through it. They're probably going to miss that person or they really wish they were at the funeral, but their mind just went to like, you got to do something else. So they're the type of person to text through something like that or talk through it or make jokes at the funeral, you know? Just so they don't have to be present in the pain.
Yeah. You have any famous sevens?
Yes, I do. And I have a good example too. Okay. So, have you ever seen the Magic Johnson, Larry Bird documentary?
I have not.
Okay. So I think it's on YouTube, but I'm sure you could just Google it. It's probably on Netflix. Magic Johnson is pretty one note throughout that whole documentary, kind of like, Michael Jordan is through his. Michael Jordan's personality trait was winning. Magic Johnson's personality trait is that he has a good time. He has a lot of fun.
Yeah,
that's him. That is Magic. That's why they call him Magic. He walks in the room. He lights up the stage. Everybody loves Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson ends up getting diagnosed with HIV.
Yeah.
And he did an interview. And in his interview, or was it a press conference? I can't remember. But he said, you know, this is new and this is different. And I'm going to beat it. And I'm going to have fun doing it. That is the most seven quote of all time. He, in that day and age, to be, you know, stricken with this disease that people saw as a death sentence, and to find a way to say, we're going to have fun. Sir, mm-hmm. are you crazy? There's nothing fun about that. But for Magic Johnson, it just made sense, you know? And that's what, like I said, that's why they call him Magic, because he's all about fun. Sure, he's a good basketball player, but people have positive things to say about Magic Johnson all the time. And when I said that Sevens don't like to be trapped and stuff, you know, like we talked about Colton quitting or whatever, Sevens are the type of person to have like seven or eight different careers, not jobs, but careers, because they bounce from one thing to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And think about Magic Johnson's last career. He quit the front office of the Lakers in the middle of the season. And when they asked him about, like, well, so what's the organization going to do moving forward? He said, I don't know, but I ain't going to be there. And then he laughed about it. Only a mm-hmm. seven will be able to quit something so public and so like in front of everybody and just be able to laugh and be like, I don't know what y'all gonna do, but I ain't gonna be there. That is a seven in a nutshell. That is, he is the consummate seven.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that I think I'm ruled out. I don't think I'm a seven.
Yeah. I didn't think you were either. But other sevens are Cameron Diaz, mm-hmm. Robin Williams, Jim mm-hmm. Carrey, Mike Myers, Bruce Willis, Robert Downey Jr., Malcolm Forbes. I see Joe Biden on this list. That worries me.
Mm-hmm. You feel like he could just quit?
I don't know if he'll quit, but that second term, he better have fun the first time, because if not, that second term might not happen. he might, I ain't going to be here.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm not saying... Joe was one of the last people to announce that he was going to run for president. Mm-hmm. And I mean, if he's a seven, that makes sense, because he's thinking, that doesn't sound like fun. Mm-hmm. You know, that I don't want to do that. Sevens, like I said, for them, being in charge is not probably the best thing for a seven. You know, typically they're not reliable in that way, right? Because if they're not having a good time, you can't count on them. Most times they will try and they will be a good friend for you like everybody else will. But I mean, if they're in a situation where they feel trapped, like a 4-year bid in the White House, I know that was, yeah, somebody pushed them to that one. I wouldn't be surprised if Barack wasn't behind the scenes going, you know,
it could be fun. Get some ice cream.
Keep it fun.
Okay. Happy birthday, Joe Biden. Yes.
And if you look at Joe Biden, even in his interactions with the press and stuff like that, he's like doing the finger guns, bang, bang, and like winking at the cameras, and he's having the time of his life. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't be shocked if Joe Biden is a seven. This thing says he's a seven, but you know, whatever. I haven't talked to him, so I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
So what you think
about sevens?
Yeah. Give me a Survivor seven. What you think? Somebody who's just out there for a good time. Ooh, you know, who's probably a good example.
Who?
Jerry Manthe.
Seven.
Yeah. Hear me out. Yeah. When she did that interview with you, she's done it all. She was a model. She's an actress. She was at Burning Man. She was over here. She dated this person. In her interview the entire time, she was just like, I mean, y'all were so great together. Now, I don't know if she's a seven, but I mean, she's lived a good life. I mean, music videos and all this other stuff. Just a little bit of everything, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very much the Epicurus.
Yeah. What about Penner?
What about Penner? You know Penner better than me. Is Penner the type of person who's bouncing around? He's very fun to be around. He's a very fun person on the podcast. Yeah. So the thing with sevens is that they're excellent brainstormers, right? They'll sit down with you and they'll talk it out. I think they're probably better like caricatures of Survivor characters that are probably better than Penner. Like, who's like our class clowns of whatever season, right? Like, just the funny person who just gets... Maybe like Tyson.
I think Tyson might be a good example.
Yeah, maybe like Tyson.
Because Tyson's not like going to sit with sadness. You know, he's going to if you were at a funeral, like, he is going to be the person who is like joking around and doesn't often like do the serious gear.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, Tyson is, he's like one of the funniest Survivor characters that you're ever going to see, right? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think he'd be a great example. I can't think of another good, like, Tyson-esque person, though. Trying to think. Maybe Coach, even. Mm-hmm. Coach is, you know, he's quite the Epicurus. He's been everywhere, and he's a good conversation. You know, he's funny. I don't know if he knows he's being funny half the time, but he's hilarious to me. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
Those are sevens. They don't like being trapped and stuff, but they don't like commitment either. You know, they're here for a good time, not a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. You sound good? You good with those?
I'm good with that. Yes. All right, we'll be right back with Chappelle to explore the final triad of the Enneagrams, the instinctive Enneagrams. But first, let me take a moment and thank a sponsor. Those are our friends over at Features, features.com. They, for 20 years, have been solely focused on delivering the unsurpassed performance sock. And a great pair of socks can be the perfect holiday gift for everyone on your list, no matter their Enneagram number or their shoe size number, because with Features, every pair feels like a custom fit. I've gotten to try a number of pairs of Features socks. They're unlike any of the other socks that I have because they have such a sturdy construction that feels different from any of the other socks that I have. Plus, they have an L and an R, so I know which foot I'm putting them on to make sure that the right, just like you have a left shoe and a right shoe, that the socks are supposed to go on the right foot. They feel great all day long and they hold up depending on what level of cushion you like, what ankle length, and more. Elite runners around the world, they love Feature socks for years, but they're not just for runners anymore. They've got a huge range of tailored socks for cycling, running, plantar fasciitis relief, and more, with zone-specific compression for targeting support. No slipping, bunching, or sliding. I wore these on a plane, and my feet didn't swell up like that happens on other, not to get like too much into me, but they were wonderful. They have an anatomical design that conforms to both of your feet to prevent blisters. No other sock gives you that custom fit the way that Features do, and they have a lifetime guarantee. What? A lifetime guarantee for your socks? Yes. Try getting this anywhere else. If you're unsatisfied at any point, 20 years from now, you'll get a replacement pair, no questions asked. They've got tons of styles to choose from, and they're family-owned since day one. You can get $10 off your first pair of Features just in time for the holidays. Use promo code RHAP at features.com for $10 off your first pair. That's FEETURES.com. Get it? Features.com. Promo code RHAP. All right. Let's get back to Chappelle and talk about the Enneagrams.
Oh, okay. Before we go into the last triad, I have to ask, are you following this a little bit better?
Certainly. Certainly.
All right. Cool. I was very nervous to talk to you. I'm not going to lie. I was like,
about
I remember
this?
Those comments. Yeah. This yeah. is not my. You keep calling me an expert, but I would rather talk about Big Brother any day.
Yes. Are there yes. many subjects that you feel like that this is not even like in the top 10 of your areas of expertise? I feel like that this is like a different side of you that we're having on this podcast today.
Is that a bad thing?
Like, no, I'm just, you're so, you know, people... you're so multi-layered.
Oh, thank you. I'm like over here like shaky. Like, oh, what are you talking about? Like, don't do that. Yeah, no, I guess I can say I'm multi-layered. I guess you could say that.
This is like a like more of a serious side of you today.
I wouldn't say serious. I thought we were having a good time.
We're having a good time, but I wouldn't say that this has been a very silly episode.
Oh, you're saying I haven't made any bidet jokes lately?
Not too many. I mean, maybe. There's still a whole triad to get through.
You want to hear something real serious? Go listen to me talk about Fear the Walking Dead and the World Beyond.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, post show recaps.
Yeah, that's when I get real serious. You mm-hmm. know, Jessica Lisa and Ron Howard.
Yes.
Josh Wiggler.
Yes.
Yes. Weekly. Go check it out. All right. Moving forward. You ready for the last three?
Ready.
All right. This is the gut. This is the body. These mm-hmm. people are, they are driven by their urges to do, right? Not in the same way like to achieve, but just they don't think first. They don't feel first. They just do.
Yeah.
And we're going to start with eights. Eights should be listed on your chart as the challenger.
The challenger, yeah.
Yeah, you really can't come up with another good name for eights because that's what they are. So let me talk about eights. I love a good eight. Eights are what you see is what you get. They are in front of you. They are very much in front of you. They are going to tell it like it is. They like authenticity just as much as fours do. But they have a really close access to anger. Mm-hmm. They're right. The anger is kind of like one of their default speeds. They're not always angry, but they can get there a lot easier than most people. They're powerful. They're dominating. They're the boss. Okay. So the thing with eights is that they're the boss because they are the best people to be the boss. and you want them to be the boss. They want to be the boss and you want that person to be the boss. They kind of like demand attention, you know? Like, it's kind of like if you're doing a group project and everybody's like, I don't want to do a group project or whatever. The eighth's the person where everybody just kind of can unanimously say, that person's in charge. You mm-hmm. know, they got it. Because that person just, they have an air about themselves of, I know what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
The eighth's primary motivation is to take control because they don't want to be controlled. So it's not that they want to be in control. They just realize if I'm in control, you can't control me. And so eights are, like I said, they're outspoken. They say what they mean. They mean what they say. And I like talking about eights because eights are, for men, eights are like looked at as just powerful figures, right? Even at young men, you know, like in school, they're the person that people admire. But eights, being a female eight, like a woman eight, is tough because at young times in life, society doesn't look at those traits as positive traits in women, right?
Yeah.
So imagine being like a 16-year-old girl who's just sure of herself, right? And she's in class and the teacher says something like, you know, a little something offensive, you know, whereas the rest of the class might be quiet. This young lady's going to stand up and say, oh no, that's a horrible thing you just said. You're a jerk. And mean it. You know, mm-hmm. and everybody might have been thinking it, but oh my God, did this 16-year-old girl just call me a jerk? You know, and whereas society might look at a young man like that, like, look at him, he's got a mind for, you know, he's going to be good in the business room, you know, in the business world or in the, you know, boardroom. Like they look at her and be like, oh my gosh, she's such a bitch, and mm-hmm. that's horrible, right? Because she didn't choose to be an eight. Life happened, and that's the life that's the card she was dealt, and that's what it led her to be. And so they grow up in situations where they are misunderstood, but by the time they're grown, they are the person in charge, just like a male eight would be. One of the best depictions of an eight is our current president, Donald Trump. Donald Trump is here for the fight. They call eights the challengers for a reason. They are here to fight. They will fight for a cause. They like the underdog. They like finding out who is the disenfranchised person. And since they won't fight for themselves, I will fight for them. They don't value weakness at all. They don't see it, you know? So if you're coming at them weak, you won't register on their radar. They just kind of, they blow you off. They want to be met head on because that's how they would meet you. So eights, while they are powerful and resourceful and straight talking and decisive, sometimes they can be very abrasive. And we see that in Donald Trump. Not to make this political at all,
yeah.
but Donald Trump is somebody who's going to say what he's going to say and you don't have to deal with it. And if you don't like it, fine. But I said it.
They're predictable. You always know what they're going to do.
You always know what an eight is going to do. Now, don't get me wrong. In a situation where an eight needs to be quiet, they can. Again, mm-hmm. we're all whole people. We have, like, this is not a remote control that's going to make you act away all the time. You can be self-aware and you can grow and you can learn these things about you and then say, okay, well, I know this is about me. Maybe I need to turn down a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm sure Donald Trump has said, he has probably not said a lot more than he would like to have said. I'll put it like that. There's probably things that he's been keeping in the chamber that he's been dying to say that people have been saying, no, you know, don't do that. And I don't want to paint eights in a negative light because like I said, they're great for business. They're great mm-hmm. for if you need somebody to fight with you. The person who, if you get cut in line, somebody hops in front of you, he's like, hey, buddy, get in the back of the line. They're not going to just stand over there and be walked over because they don't want to be walked over.
Yeah.
At their best, they can use that strength that they have to improve other people's lives. And then at their worst, they can be, you know, your worst nightmare if they want to.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's eights. You know, they don't want to be controlled by other people, right. So they take control.
Chappelle, can you tell me the difference between an eight, who we're talking about is somebody who is like a very take charge personality, who's like looking for a fight, and a three, who is going to stop at nothing to win?
Okay, because a three, not only do they want to win, but they want to be admired, right? So winning equals admiration for them. And so it's not about the fight. It's about you like me. And so eights and threes get themselves mixed up all the time because they both are very active, both very aggressive in what they want. They know how to go out and get it. The thing is, a three will be in a room with a bunch of people and say, I'm not going to say that. That's offensive. And an eight is going to have said it and meant it and stood in it. And mm-hmm. everybody might gasp and say, why would you say that? And they're going to be looking at you like, I don't understand. What's the problem? You know, they're straight shooters. Threes are not necessarily straight shooters. They're not authentic. Remember, that's the weakness of the three, is that they're putting on airs. They're trying to show you, like, look how great I am. Where eight is saying, no, this is me. Who are you? Mm-hmm. And so it's a very different struggle. So think Lisa Welchel versus Donald Trump. Lisa Welchel is not going to say the thing, right? Mm-hmm. She's not. She's nice. She's the nice Christian lady, as Malcolm called her. Donald Trump is going to say the thing every time. Mm-hmm. And you're just going to have to deal with it. And not to pick on Donald Trump, there are other good eights. Martin Luther King Jr. is an eight. Because again, he is straight talking. He's going to say the thing. If he feels like you are saying something that's offensive, he's going to say the thing. He's also fighting for the underdog in his way. Barbara Walters, another good female eight, a woman eight. People who work with Barbara Walters don't come away from Barbara Walters saying such great things about her all the time. Those people on The View sound like they're under duress a lot. And they do. I've seen people say the things. We've heard the backstage arguments. And if you haven't, Google them. But Barbara Walters is going to say what she's going to say. Another good example is Toni Morrison, the poet, writer, laureate. She's a civil rights activist. Toni Morrison was asked in an interview, like, how come you don't write about white people? And whereas, you know, a three might say, well, you know, that's not really something that I'm into, or I really just want to tell black stories right now. Toni Morrison looked at that reporter and basically said, and I'm paraphrasing because I can't remember the exact quote, but is, do you understand how amazingly racist that is? She called this lady racist for asking her a question. Mm-hmm. And although it might be a race related question and it might even come off racist, it might be racist. Did you have to say that? But at least they don't think twice about it. It's just their default, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So we got some other eights on this list. Serena Williams, Sean Connery, Paul Newman, Clint Eastwood, Tommy Lee Jones, Rosie O'Donnell, mm-hmm. Alec Baldwin, Roseanne Barr. Yeah, these are people who are, you know, they're not hiding in any room. They're the person who, they're in the room and you're going to know it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like a lot of eights are fighting with other eights.
Yeah, I think you can't put too many of them in, you know, there can only be one boss. And I think a lot of times you put them in charge, you put them in the same room, and you're going to get some heat.
A lot of eights on social media, I feel like.
No, I think social media empowers people to be more outspoken. I think that's a different thing. You know, you might say something on social media and be able to step away from it. You know, a five could say something real quick and then cut the computer off, and then they don't have to deal with it until they come back, right? Mm-hmm. Eights are the kind of person who, no, if you say something incorrect, they're going to correct you. And then they're going to expect for you to say something back. They want to have that conversation. Yeah. They like provocative conversation. They like energy. And I think that's the thing with eight, nines, and ones. It's all about energy with them. But for eights, they are lusting after the energy. They're the type of person that if you're at Thanksgiving dinner, nobody's talking about politics. We're talking about football and, you know, family and times. And they might sit around and just say something like, so what do you think about Donald Trump? And everybody's like, oh my God, you know, now that we have a big conversation, right? And you're like, why did you do that? Nobody wants to do that. But for eights, they're like, yeah. Yeah. Like they can eat it with a spoon. Yeah. They love it. So that's eights. What do you think?
I mean, I think that's a very clear picture that you painted there with the eights.
They're easy to paint a good picture of. I think I'm trying to think of some more good eights, maybe like Magneto. From Magneto. Yeah, Magneto's the guy. He's going to say the thing.
Magneto says the thing?
He says the thing. You know, you know where he stands at all times.
Yeah.
They are the leader, and they're going to take it by force. And you know, most times you want them to have it because they're good at it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Sound good?
All right. Survivor 8. Boston Rob?
Maybe Boston Rob, maybe Russell Hantz.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're talking about caricatures of an eight, right?
Yeah.
Again, you know these people in real life. I don't. But based off of what I see on TV, there could only be one. There was no way Boston Rob and Russell were going to be able to last on that tribe. There was never going to be an alliance to the end on the villain's tribe with those two people, right?
Yeah.
And it came to a head a lot earlier than it probably should have, but it had to happen.
Yeah.
And Russell does a good job on Survivor. Both his seasons, you know, kind of pushing other people in the front. You know, he did that with Mick Trimming. He did that, or like Jason. He's like hiding behind that person and letting them take the bullets. And then he became the guy who was in control of the alliance, you know. And Boston Rob realized after his first season, and Boston Rob is kind of a straight shooter too. He says what's said. I think he's probably more concerned with being liked than Russell. you know, oh, speaking of eights, having someone meet them where they are. Think about Russell when Sandra threw his hat into the fire, right? Russell's like, I like that. Yeah, that's what I like. He like that got him going. He wasn't like, how dare you throw my hat to the fire, you horrible woman. He was like, no, do more of that. Give me that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, or when Jason and Ben are fighting, Russell's just sitting there licking his chops again. Like, yeah, he's just, it's something about that energy that yeah. just gets him going. Like warrior.
Richard Hatch, I think, is probably another one.
Probably. I've never heard him mince words. And mm-hmm. I didn't think he was too interested in being well-liked either. I think he realized, you know, he saw the game for what it was and he made some calculated choices and then he led his alliance and they let him, you mm-hmm. know. Rudy might even be an eight. You know, he's kind of outspoken. Yeah. You know, his own way. Yeah. yeah. Or maybe he's just old.
Yeah. Don't use like, he's just got like, you know, old man. I don't give yeah. an F.
With, yeah. yeah. That's different. That's different. But mm-hmm. Richard Hatch probably, right? Richard Hatch is definitely the person sitting there and like, which I want to talk about. Yeah, let's talk about something provocative. You mm-hmm. know? So, yeah. I could get that. I can get with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You good there?
I'm good. No, I'm not an eight.
No, I didn't think you were an eight, Rob.
I don't have big eight energy. No.
Yeah. I didn't think you were an eight.
Cross that one off.
Yeah, we can cross that one off. Okay. So now let's talk about the nines. Nines are on your chart, should be called the Peacemaker.
Peacemaker, yep.
Yeah. Okay. So Peacemakers, again, they're like eights. They have access to anger. It's there. But nines, their goal is to not be affected by anything. They don't want to be affected by anger. It's right there, but they don't want to be affected. So they have decided that I'm going to go with the flow.
Yeah,
I'm going to keep peace. I'm going to try to keep my like homeostasis with the world, right? I got to keep the anger down. I got to keep the happiness away. Like I got to keep all these things in moderation.
Keep the happiness away.
There's too much of everything. Too much of anything is a good thing. Mm-hmm. You know, too much exuberance, you know, it's too much. That for nines, they want to keep everything level. They kind of want normalcy. They want to, a lot of times they don't want to do anything. Nines are the type of person who's always doing stuff, but never doing anything at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So like, whereas three has a task list of things that they have to get accomplished, nines are kind of like, I have this list of things that I need to do and I just don't know where to start. So I'm just going to pick one. I once heard some lady say, and I don't want to say some lady, I think it was Suzanne Stabile. She's a writer of an Enneagram book and I'll mm-hmm. give her credit at the end of this as well. That nines will lay out all the index cards with the list of the things that they need to do on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And they won't know which one is the most important. They just pick right out the middle, you know? Whereas most people can prioritize those things. For nines, it's really hard. Inertia is something they struggle with. Momentum. They kind of like, if there's, they will stay in the same place until they have to. And then when they move, they will move and then they go back to trying to remain still. They're not doers, even though like we all have things to do. But for a nine, they'd rather just not be affected by stuff, honestly, which is why they call it the peacekeeper. Because while there's so much conflict and so much things going on, a nine would just rather be in their own space and not have to deal with any of that.
Mm-hmm.
Not have to deal with the conflict, not have to deal with the tasks, not have to deal with achieving. They just want things to kind of be easygoing. Nines, there are a ton of nines. So there's more sixes than anything, but there's a ton of nines because life is hard. And nines are like, if I kind of just go with the flow, life will be easy. They want harmony in their relationships. They try not to make waves. They dislike conflict and personal tension. And, they often surrender their real feelings and what they want for like the greater good to not make waves. Right. The nine type person, you say, hey, what do you want to eat today? And they're like, I don't care. Like, you don't have an mm-hmm. opinion at all. No, not really. Well, why? I don't know. Just whatever you want. Mm-hmm. And they might not even like it, but they just, I don't feel like having a conversation, or they don't want the conflict, or they don't want to argue about it, you know? So they're like, it's fine. You know, that's a nine in general. Nines are good, like wingmen, because if you can convince a nine to go someplace with you, they'll go and they will like, they're a good time. You know, they're also, they're good. Well, I guess I should say they're stubborn. Cause like I said, they don't want to do anything. They got stuff to do and they're doing it, but they don't really want to. So when a nine digs their heels in and say, I'm not doing this, there's no way to get a nine to do it. And it doesn't happen often, but when it happens, you're like, oh gosh, you know, where did that come from? Because you're so used to them going with the flow. They're not self-starters. They kind of need something to kind of get their engine going. They tend to procrastinate. They procrastinate a lot because they just don't want to do it. You know, it's like, oh, I don't want to. That's a nine. It's kind of like, mantra, like, I don't really want to do this. And then they get it done. And like I said, and we love them for it, right? We love a nine because we love somebody who can see all sides of the argument, right? We love to be able to come to this person and talk to them because we know they're going to listen. And they might not be listening, but they'll hear you out. And nines can listen to, like I said, they can hear all sides of the argument, which is kind of frustrating, actually, because if you're talking to a nine and you really want them to go there with you, they will go there with you. And you will believe that this nine believes everything you're saying. And then they'll go hear their opposing argument for somebody else, and they'll go there with them too. And they're like, yeah, this guy's great. This guy, he understands me. Mm-hmm. But if you find out that he's agreeing with your enemy, you might not like that too much. So yeah, so that's nines. They're agreeable, they're stable, they're trusting, steadfast, I guess you could say. They just kind of be stubborn, and they lack some inertia.
Hmm. So the part about procrastinating and not wanting to do the thing, like, I feel like, that sounds familiar, but like, I also feel like I feel like I can prioritize like the things that need to get done. Like, I don't think I would struggle with like, put the index cards where they need to be. I feel like I could do that. So, yeah. And I feel like I feel like a lot of times I have to be a self-starter, even though I don't always want to. So I don't know. This thing's here.
But do you not always want to?
It depends on the day.
That's the thing. You have to self start, right? You have to. We all do.
Yeah.
But for you, is it tough to do that? For nines, it's particularly tough to just get to do the things, right? The things we know they got to do. For nines, I like to ask the questions like, "Will you do almost anything to avoid conflict?" Rob.
Sometimes, yeah.
Hmm. Okay. And you said
depends with who.
Yeah. Who are you trying to have conflict with, Rob?
Now, who am I trying to avoid conflict with?
Yeah. I mean, do you have conflict with people?
I mean, I'm married.
I mean, do you have conflict with people outside of your marriage?
occasionally, yeah.
Occasionally, but you don't love it.
I don't like it. Yeah.
Yeah. Eights love it.
Hey, I'm not an eight. Yeah. We never ruled that out. Yeah.
Do you ever get lost doing trivial things, like while you have like really important stuff to do, but you're just like doing stuff that has nothing to do with, you know, with what you have going on?
Sometimes that can happen. Yeah.
Sometimes. Yeah. Okay. Are you generally happy to go along with what other people's have going on, like as opposed to like creating like the agenda for the group?
Depends.
Like if you and I were trying to decide what we were going to do today, are you generally okay with me just kind of taking the reins on that? Or do you have like a plan?
I don't know if I have a plan, but I definitely would have like a whole list of things I don't want to do.
Oh yeah. That's fine. That's nine-ish, you know. Yeah. Do people often want you to be more decisive?
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah.
I'd agree with that. Sometimes you ask me things, Rob, and I'm like, just you tell me to do it and I'm fine. Mm-hmm. Just pick.
Yeah.
I think you asked me about StreamYard and I was like, Rob, this is your wheelhouse. If you tell me to do it, I got you. You know? Let's see. Do you often choose the path of least resistance?
I will say that, a lot of times, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do others see you as more peaceful than you really are?
Probably.
Okay. I mean, Rob, we're getting a lot of yeses here. These are nine questions, you know? Uh-huh. You have a hard time getting started, but once you do, you're really able to get a lot of stuff done.
Yeah, I think so. Momentum is a big thing. I feel like it was easier before I had kids, and also easier before my kids didn't go to school all day.
Yeah. Are you ever just quietly stubborn about certain things? Like, you don't really want to do it. You don't want it to happen. You're just not going to participate, but you're just kind of pushing back about it in your own mind. You're not going to actually say, I don't want to do this, but you're just going to kind of like sulk a little bit.
Yeah, a lot of times.
That's a big nine thing. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Cause it's hard to dig your feet in against conflict and also not start conflict. Right. So for one of my closest friends is a nine, and I swear, it's like he never tells me, no, let's go do this. Let's go do this. Let's go do this. And he's like, okay, fine. And then every now and then I'll look at him and be like, are you okay? And he's like, I don't want to do this. I'm like, fine. You know, but it's getting him to say the thing, right? Because he's just easier. Just like, you know what? It's fine. What's the worst that can happen here? We're good here. You know, nines often don't think they're very important in the grand scheme of life, you know, whereas a three knows that they're important because that's what they're going for, right? I need to be important to you. Twos want to be somebody who you know that you can count on. Not that I'm like, do you really even care about me? Do I have any friends?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like we're in a good territory here, Rob.
Yeah. Is this what, yeah, where you had me? Is this what you thought?
100%.
Yeah. Okay. See, you need the expert. You knew.
I'm just asking you questions. You could easily tell me the answer to these questions or no, and you could be something else, Rob. I'm just asking you questions.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. You find routines at work and home, obviously.
Yeah.
And you feel unsettled when something throws you off your routine.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. 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 Okay. This is 9 energy.
Yeah. I feel like this is one of the lame ones, though, Chappelle.
I love a good 9.
Yeah.
Because, again, could you imagine not having to be, like, being able to not be, you know, the person who people are looking at like, as in, like an 8 almost, like, you know, not with conflict. Or if I'm sitting here telling you you're not authentic, like a 3, or you're overbearing, like a 2, or you're anxious, like a 6, or you're, you know, unreliable and flighty, like a 7, you know, and I'm telling you, you're agreeable and people generally like you, and people feel like they can talk to you, and people feel like they can open up to you, and you see both sides of the argument, and, you know, things of that nature. And that sounds boring to you?
It's a little boring, yeah. Not as super flashy, yeah.
Yeah. If I said the 7's greatest sin is like gluttony, right? They want all of it.
Yeah.
And then 8's is kind of like a lust, almost like for energy. For 9's, it'd probably be sloth. You know, just this ability to just kind of move slowly and not be affected, you know, and move at your own speed and pace. And this is another reason why I wouldn't compare this to Survivor. Because again, you got a very glowing edit in Survivor about someone who was really in charge of what was going on.
Not in Survivor All-Stars.
Not at all, actually. And so if we were just going off of Survivor All-Stars, then maybe somebody would think you were 9. Look at you, just sitting around waiting to get picked off. But you see why that's not a great example, right? Because we don't know what motivates you. We don't know what makes you move the way you move. But because a lot of the listeners, patrons, including myself, will know you from all the things you let us into your life. So it's easy for me to say, Rob's probably a 9. Because I don't have to hear about you saying, you know, harsh things on accident, or, you know, you're not throwing your achievements in our faces, and you're not, you know, flighty and bouncing off them from thing to thing to thing. You know, it's kind of, you're stable. And I think people can identify that in 9's, and they gravitate toward them because of it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gonna be here every day.
Yeah. We hope so. We can only hope.
Okay. What about famous 9's? So let me hear about some famous 9's. Maybe that might make me feel better.
Queen Elizabeth II. Look at you. In good company.
Yes.
In good company. Bob Crowley could be a 9, Rob. I'm just saying.
Okay.
No, I'm just saying. I'm not saying he is, but, you know, whatever. I wouldn't be shocked. There's a lot of 9s. Oh, get this. Whoopi Goldberg is a 9.
Oh, all right.
And we love Whoopi.
We stand Whoopi. Yeah. She won me $20 this week. Yeah.
Exactly. She tweeted. I pay attention. Think about Whoopi. Whoopi is on the View panel where they have all of these intense conversations, and she has been the moderator for like 15 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's because she's able to keep the peace, or at least be able to keep the show moving. Mm-hmm. She's in the middle of all of these extreme opinions, and Whoopi can talk about them all.
Yeah.
That's a 9. That's what you guys are good for.
Yeah. You could hear something that, well, I don't agree with that, but I'm not going to lose my mind. Yeah. Like, let's talk about it. Why do you think that?
Exactly. Janet Jackson is a 9. Kevin Costner,
Annette
Bening. Yeah, no, I'll say. George W. Bush.
It's just unlike George H.W. Bush.
Yeah, he raised the 6. Who knew? John F. Kennedy Jr. Let's look at some other ones. John Goodman, Matthew Broderick, Tobey Maguire, Zooey Deschanel, Zooey, as some would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't think of George W. Bush as a peacemaker.
Some would say, you know, this is a job requirements, probably, you know, you got some job demands that make you a little active too. You got a task list, some tasks you get. Look, I've already told you how I feel about Joe Biden. I pray for the guy. He's not going to, if he's not having a good time, we might look, this second term might be interesting. We'll just see. But yeah, so there, like I said, we can do whatever. We can
do you have any more famous, I interrupted you. Any more famous 9's?
Oh, yeah. We got Tony Bennett, Ringo Starr, Carlos Santana.
The worst Beatle.
He technically, yeah.
Yeah.
Jack Johnson, George Lucas. You like George Lucas.
He's okay. Right? Like his early stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Audrey Hepburn, Sophia Loren, Morgan Freeman.
Oh.
Good 9.
Okay.
Yeah.
I feel a little better now.
You should. He played God one time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There you go. All right. So you want to, do you want to move on to the last number, or do you want to, and then double back about some like growth areas for nine? Are you good?
Just, no, let's cut that. I have more questions for you, but let's talk about the final one. That's, and why do you start with two and not with one? Why'd they make the Enneagrams this way?
Oh, listen, this is an ancient, and that's another thing. The Enneagram goes back way back before Myers and Briggs were both alive. Yeah, this is an ancient art, right?
Talk Who to made this? Guy.
Some ancient like Brazilians or something like that passed it down. Oh. And that's another reason why I don't call myself an expert, because there are people who have done the research and I am not one of them. Mm-hmm. And if you really want to know more about the Enneagram, this is where I'm going to plug these nice people who I listen to and read. Ian Morgan Cron and Suzanne Stabile do a great work. There's a good book called The Road Back to You, studying the Enneagram. There's also several other authors, Rizzo and Hudson, who have done this research. And so they will tell you more about the Enneagram, more than I could ever tell you. I'm just here to kind of help Rob find out that he was a nine.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But I think traditional like knowledge says that like this is like ancient wisdom passed down from like Bolivia in Argentina, I think, not Brazil. No. And then like it has like moved around and became like a school of thought all throughout up until like the 1960s. So it came from like ancient times, and then it just evolved and evolved and evolved, and more research has been done and da 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 da. So it got to like the 60s and 70s, and then it just kind of got to the United States. And then recently it's become like this very popular pseudoscience, some would call it. And so that's how we ended up where we are.
Okay. All right.
All right.
One.
All right. Well, talk about one. Ones. Tell me what the chart that you have calls ones.
Reformer.
All right. Yeah.
Nobody knows. Snow. Nobody knows.
Yeah, we
know
snow.
Yes.
Okay.
Reformer.
All right. Some people call ones a reformer, which is a better name for what I'm about to call them.
Oh.
I'm going to call them the perfectionists.
Perfectionists.
And just because I want you to know that I don't mean perfectionist. I'm just using it as a broad term. But reformer is the actual term for what we're going to be talking about right now. Because everybody thinks they're a perfectionist because they want to do things well, right? Like, I'm a perfectionist. I really like to have things a certain way. Yep, fine. But ones, they really embody perfection, like as far as like being a perfectionist. They're called reformers because they're able to walk into a room and see what needs to be improved. And whereas eights want to challenge things and nines don't want to like be affected, ones want to affect stuff. They do, but they want to fix it. They want to identify what's wrong and make it better. And so they live their life like that, where they start inside. They start with themselves, right? So they can see what they're doing wrong, and it tears them apart. Ones have a voice in their head. And I'm going to say this because every time I listen to anybody talk about the Enneagram or read about the Enneagram, I'm going to say this because this will speak to the ones and only the ones. Ones have a voice in their head that is constantly saying, is that right? Mm-hmm. And they hear this little voice and it says, you made it to bed. Did you make it to bed correctly? You know, did you unload the dishwasher? Did you load it correctly? Did you do this? Did you do this right? It's right or wrong. Black and white. Completely wrong or right. That's what they have in their head. And they are questioning themselves and their morality and, you know, their ability to do things correctly all day. And so because they're questioning themselves and their own abilities, they start to question the things around them, right? Because they're always thinking, I can fix that. I can fix that. I can fix that. So the problem with somebody like that is that once that starts to like affect the people around them, it's not great, right? Nobody likes to be told that you're not good enough. You're not doing that correctly. I could do that better. You could be doing this. You could be doing that. Nobody likes that. And look no further than the ones to tell you, yeah, it sucks, because they're saying it to themselves all the time. So ones are principled, and they are purposeful, and they are self-controlled, and they are looking for perfection. And so they are the person who they want to be morally correct, you know, and whatever that means in their life. So I'm not saying that this person is benevolent, because no one is, right? This person is not above and beyond all the rest of the people, but their system of beliefs is something that they cling to, and they need to be right about it. And if they're not right about it, they're going to try to figure out a way to be right. They have to be right. So threes have to achieve. They have to be looked at as good, admirable. Ones have to be good, and whatever that means in their head. So that they don't really do the gray area. There's no gray area. Is it right or it's wrong? They're the type of person that if we, let's go back to the bookshelf analogy, right? Mm-hmm. We talked about, or I guess it was a metaphor, but yeah, we talked about the bookshelf. The fives are going to research it to death and maybe one day get the bookshelf done. Once it's done, it'll probably be great because they've done all the research, right? Eights are going to go and do the bookshelf. They're going to just put it together because it's a bookshelf and they're supposed to, I need to get it done, it's done. Threes are going to build the bookshelf because they need to accomplish it, knock it off their list of things to do. You ask me for a bookshelf, here's your bookshelf. Ones are going to read the manual and they are going to see that there is a piece missing. A mm-hmm. tiny little washer is missing from the tools, you know, that you need to put the bookshelf together. And they are going to call the 1-800 number and say, you guys owe me a washer. And they are got to be the only type of people who do that, because anybody else is like, you know, it's fine. Mm-hmm. But for a one, they will look at that bookshelf and say, that thing is wrong. It is wrong. And it will drive them crazy, like a little nagging sound every time they walk in the room, like, look at me, you did this incorrectly. So they're the only type of people that I think, and I've heard Suzanne Stabile say this, and I trust her, that will call the 800 number and say, I need that piece, or mm-hmm. I can't put this together because mm-hmm. it's incorrect. So that's how ones operate. They're ethical. They have a strong sense of right and wrong. And they're crusaders for what's right. And they want to fix and make the world a better place. The problem with that is that, you know, everything's not theirs to fix. And perfection is impossible. Nobody is perfect. But they are striving for perfection, and it will drive them crazy a lot of times. It is one of those things that, like, if you're constantly questioning yourself like that, how do you get through the day? That sounds exhausting to me, honestly. To have somebody just nagging you all the time mm-hmm. in your head, and then to have someone else correct you. Could you imagine having something in your head saying, that's not right, that's not right, that's not right, and you getting past that, and then the first person you run into says, hey, you got something on you. You'd like explode, like, excuse me? Like, I've been trying to get perfect all day, and now here you are, random person, with your untied shoes and your unkempt hair. Like, how dare you? You know, the amount of anger in eights, nines, and ones are incredible. Because, like I said, nines are not addressing this anger, so it's just building up. And eights are, they're just using it, they're wielding it like a sword. But ones are angry because look at the world. It could be better. And it seems like I'm the only one who cares. And so that's a one. Like I said, I like perfectionists because it triggers something in people's heads where they hear that and say, oh, okay, I'm that. But then reformer is a lot better because you can be a perfectionist in your own life. But if you're a reformer, you want everything to be perfect, not just you.
You have any famous ones?
This thing says Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. Probably a good one. Mm-hmm. I think so. Meryl Streep is a one. Let's see, Ralph Nader.
That's okay. All right.
Yeah. Okay. We're getting somewhere. Sandra Day O'Connor. Mm-hmm. Michelle Obama. Let's see. Pope John Paul II. My mm-hmm. favorite pope, personally. Mm-hmm. Let's
see. This new one is being a wild man. Yeah.
I like that guy too, though. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tina Fey. Catherine Hepburn. William F. Buckley. George Harrison. Martha Stewart. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
So yeah. So and Martha Stewart's a good example of, you know, ones are not always right.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. they strive for it.
Get in trouble. You know? Right.
Yeah, right. They get in trouble too.
Is there a survivor that's out there?
Probably some. Let's talk this one out, right? So we want somebody who's rule oriented, who cares about the rules. These mm-hmm. things have to be a certain way, or, you know, yeah. or else.
Chappelle, can we go back just for one second, because we didn't talk about a survivor. We talked about me with the nine, but we didn't talk about you know, how that applies to survivor. But, you know, in terms of, like, I actually feel like that the nine is a really good skill set for survivor, because it's like, you know, how do you do well on survivor? Yeah, you could sort of like lead from the front and say, like, hey, everybody, this is what we're doing. This is my group. This is the five. Okay, we're voting out all those other people. You know, that's mm-hmm. sort of like the eight mentality. But I do feel like that the peacemaker is like, hey, let's play the middle. Well, I'm gonna work with everybody. Like, what do you know? Well, like, okay, let's hear what you have to say. Like, I actually think it's a very effective way of playing the survivor game. And I think that is like what I would default to in a game of survivor of, okay, there's eight people here. Let me try to see like just how many of these eight I could get, like, feel like they're working with me.
Yeah. And I mean, way to be self-congratulatory, Rob, but yeah, I think that is true. That is a good strategy. I think once we get into the chart a little bit more, because we're almost done, but I do want to explain the chart to you.
Yeah.
I'll talk about how that manifests itself in other ways. But I guess the problem with being a nine and survivor is if you can't find that inertia, right? And you end up just a number. And you end up just getting picked off because you're not willing to make the move, right? Mm-hmm. You don't want to start the conflict. You don't want to call the person out. You see that they might have an idol, but you just kind of sit on that information.
Sort of like Laurel probably is also like in that sort of situation where she's and ends up like, okay, well, okay, I'm good with all the, with all these different people. But then ultimately, you know, if you're conflict avoidant and unable to pull that trigger at the right time, that could lead to a bad situation.
Yeah, very go with the flow. And like I said, they have conflict. We all do. Like you said, you're with certain people, you are going to go there. And nines are very close to eight on the Enneagram on that chart. And so there are some eight in them. You know, once you get them active, you know, they will go there with you. Mm-hmm.
So it matters what you're next to is important.
The proximity. Yeah. So it's a reason why the chart's drawn like that. But yeah, like I said, fives will have four traits and six traits. Sixes will have seven traits and five, you know, whatever, and eight traits. And then, you know, so on and so forth. So yeah, if you find yourself in Survivor and you're a nine, then yeah, sitting back and kind of letting the bigger powers kind of pick themselves off is fine until you look up and you're next. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, well, now what? And you have to now all of a sudden not be a nine. And I think for you, Rob, you were such a big fan of the show and you had a good idea of what you wanted to do. But you also, as a nine, are somebody who's very agreeable. So you were able to connect with like Dina, or you were connect with Christy. These people who other people were just not willing to talk to. A nine to talk to anybody. Mm-hmm. Whatever. I mean, Rob,
who cares?
You will talk to anybody. You're talking to me. So I know you'll talk to anybody. And so, yeah, I think for that skill set, that kind of works out. The issue is that if the nine gets to the end, do we respect it, right? Do we vote for the nine who just kind of hung out and was friends with everybody? Or do we say, well, the nine is sitting next to this person, the Boston Rob or something, and he took control, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So something to think about.
Okay, well, let's go back to the one, the reformer.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you see anybody in terms of how a one plays Survivor?
Who need to make things better? I can't think of anybody. I guess we should probably talk about final tribal council, right? Mm-hmm. The person who's really like you did something immoral and I cannot vote for you. Maybe like Boo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked about that with Dreams. You just talked about that with Dreams, and Boo was really like, as a Christian man, how dare you? You know, like, I think that is a very nine thing to say. Now, maybe people are just portraying themselves as
a one.
Oh, one. I'm sorry. Yeah. Maybe people are just portraying themselves as holier than thou in those moments. A little bit, you know, a little looking down their noses at somebody who was able to deceive better than they were.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some people who just aren't willing to be that person. They're just not willing to deceive. I will go down with the ship and I'm just not going to be seen as, you know, immoral. Maybe like Janet. Is that her from recent season?
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, she in the face of, you know, some accusations that were made against Kelly, you know, against other castmates and, you know, some things that were said. And she could have just gone with the flow and, you know, ignored certain things about, I think his name was Dan. I'm really trying. This is such a bad season. But she spoke up.
Yeah.
And she was dutiful and people and it paid off for her in the end. We love her. Right. I can't think of her name, but we love her. It you know, maybe being quiet in that moment would have paid off a little bit better, but it probably would have driven her crazy, you know, to do that. If she's a one, that's the kind of thing that you just can't let go. It's gonna eat at you because in your head, someone's saying you're a bad person for letting this bad thing happen.
Okay. All right. So now we have the picture of like all the people and I have to commend you. Incredible job.
Thank you. Oh, before we go on, I got a better one I think of in my head. Not a Survivor one, but for any of the listeners, I'm a Harry Potter person. Think of Hermione Granger.
Mm-hmm.
Rob, I don't know. You know very little about Harry Potter.
Very little.
But Harry has a friend named Hermione. She's very smart, intelligent. Like, she's the smartest person in their class. She is...
She makes spells.
She makes spells. She's a witch. You know, we get it. Hermione has a famous Harry Potter quote where she basically says, like, listen, you guys keep acting like this, you're going to get us killed. Or worse, you're going to get us expelled.
Mm-hmm.
That is the most one thing ever. Like, no. We can't break the rules because what if somebody finds out? We could get in trouble for being wrong, you know? Mm-hmm. That's like the one of it all. You know, she's a good solid one. I think there are some Gilmore Girl fans out there. Not Rory, but her homegirl, the one she's always in a battle with. And her name will escape me and it'll come to me in 5 minutes. So I'll come back to it. She is definitely a one where it's not even about, it's not about achieving. It's about doing what you think is right all the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Chappelle.
Yes.
Have we talked about you?
Yes, we talked about me. Rob, would you like to guess?
Oh, boy. Well, this is a challenge because I feel like that I don't have it off the top of my head. I don't think that you're a two.
Oh, why? What's that about?
I don't think that you are somebody who's just constantly helpful,
really?
but like looking for something in return.
Baby, Rob, I didn't know we were here. Okay, that's fine.
Are you a two?
No, but still, I'd like people to think I was a
two. You think you're a two. I don't think that you are the three.
Really?
And let's not, are we going to do this with every single number?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to just tell me? Why don't you just tell me what number you are?
Just guess, Rob.
Okay, so I'm going through them and I'm trying to fill the air, so it's not like me thinking on the podcast.
That's fine.
I don't think you're the four. Mm-hmm. I didn't think that you were the five. There's researching constantly. Mm-hmm. In terms of being the six, I don't think that is you either, being like the Stephen Fishback. So I guess that, okay, so how about this? I'm wondering, could you be a seven?
Ring the bell. I am a seven.
Yeah.
Like Colton.
Yes.
Yes. Based on Colton, I probably would have made him an eight, right? He was just kind of saying what was on his mind and, you know, whatever. But I was shocked to hear that he was seven, but that just shows you how different people really are. Mm-hmm. But we're still motivated by the same core, you know, need to kind of find the exuberance
in
life.
The enthusiast.
I am, if nothing else, enthusiastic.
Yeah.
I'm very one note.
I get that.
Yeah.
I get
you
that.
You get that. Yeah. And like I said, seven's a jack of all trades. You could probably drop me into any podcast and I'd be fine.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just because I listen to everything. I want to get the happiness from everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I started this podcast when saying that like I had ran into some issues in school, and then I was having like a breakdown, and then I found out about the Enneagram and just blah, blah, blah. So what was happening was I really wanted to get straight A's. Straight A's is not my thing. But this particular semester, I had convinced myself that I had to get straight A's. And so I was losing it. Because don't get me wrong, I got nothing but A's. I was very much patting myself on my own back. Like I was cooking. The problem is it didn't look like I was going to get an A in this class. And I am not a straight A student. That is not my bag. But for some reason, I convinced myself that this is what I need. And so I was telling my coworkers, like, I'm about to go to Houston and I'm going to go party. I'm going to drive. Because I was not living in Houston at the time. I was living outside of Houston, so a few hours. And I was like, I'm going to drive out there Friday. I'm going to party, and I'm going to come back Monday, and I'm going to do this school thing, and everything's going to be fine. Screw this. And they were like, why do you have to go do that? Like, why don't you just stay here and think about it and, you know, study, and you'll be fine. I was like, no, I have to get out of here. And at that moment, I felt so trapped. Because people were telling me, like, don't do that. Don't do it. You can't do that. And I was like, I'm going to go party all weekend, and there's nothing you guys can tell me to stop me. And so I get in the car, and this is after they tell me about the Enneagram podcast. And honestly, I felt very attacked, because I was hearing that, like, I'm unreliable and I'm flighty and, you know, I don't, like, connect with emotion, and I don't have real human connection with people because I'm always trying to keep everything, you know, above the surface. You know, kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, how dare you? And so I'm driving to Houston because I'm still going. I don't care what pseudoscience y'all have taught me. I'm still going. But I listened to Enneagram podcast the whole way there. And it started to talk about how your Enneagram number, you start to exhibit traits of other numbers, unhealthy traits of other numbers when you get stressed out. And so that, or when you are starting to feel like, you know, in growth, you know, or like you're becoming the better you, you start to exhibit other numbers. You're still your number. But you start to take on the good or bad traits from those other numbers, right? And so for sevens, if you look at the chart, and this is a good segue into the chart, sevens, that arrow and stress is pointed to one, right?
Okay.
And in stress, I become perfectionistic and rigid, and I care about things being a certain way or else, right? A little judgy. I mm-hmm. get judgy a lot. Yeah, and that's exactly how I felt. Why did I want straight A's? I couldn't put a finger on it. I had no clue why this was bothering me. I hadn't gone my whole life without straight A's. I was on degree number two. And I was like, why now? And I was just like, why are you acting like this? And I was like, you're just stressed out. You need to come back. Remember things that make you happy. Remember things that make you you. This is not your happiness. It's not going to depend on you getting straight A's. And I was able to come out of that. And then that's when I was like, oh man, this is good. This is good. Because whenever I start acting like that, I can now identify that as some harmful behavior, right? Where I get super rigid and judgy and kind of, you know, the harmful parts of one. And so at my best, according to your chart, sevens start to look like fives. And we become less scattered and more focused on researching and knowing, you know, the right, you know, knowing what's, you know, filling our head with knowledge as opposed to filling our head with experiences in life. And so for me, that fiveness comes out in my, you know, deep wells of knowledge for these random things that I like, right?
Yes.
Like where I can just sit down and just dive into, like, tell you anything about your podcast from episodes that I haven't seen in 20 years, right? Mm-hmm. Or anything, you know, from about television shows. This is why I'm a good seven, is because of the five, right? The connection to five. And so that's how the chart works. So not only do I have traits from six, I'm in the middle of six and eight, so I can be abrasive. Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say, and I can say things, it's not my default, but it's right there. It's right there. So that's why you get a lot of, whoa, why did Chappelle say that moments? But I also worry, you know, I have fears like a six. I get anxious sometimes. I start to question things. I'm not always so sure of myself, but at my best, I start to look like a five.
Okay.
I start to get those behaviors within my sevenness. And at my worst, I start to exhibit oneness.
Chappelle, this is pretty amazing because this is, I think that really my mind is blown on in terms of this, because I'm looking at the chart and I'm wondering, like, what are the lines? What do the lines mean with the connection? Because it's like the gif of, like, It's Always Sunny with, like, the conspiracy theory and all the lines mm-hmm. connected to one another. But so that there's basically like two. So if you're stressed, you can determine you're going one way. I'm exhibiting these negative traits I don't like. But if I'm not, mm-hmm. if I'm in the right mindset, I'm going towards these positive traits. And I see that mm-hmm. there's like arrows that point the right way. But how do you know that I see the lines? But how do you know which arrow points to which number? How do you know, like, is it always the number to the left is negative?
No, I think depending on the chart you're looking at. So most charts have arrows. Some of them have lines. Try to choose a different chart if you're on Google.
Yeah.
There's arrows.
Okay.
But for you, you are a nine.
Yes.
And so nines are easy because nines, threes, and sixes, they're three apart, right? And they are in the, they're like the core triad of, like, numbers, right? Mm-hmm. They kind of move freely between each, I guess, core motivation, right? So nines are one step away from feelers, and they're one step away from thinkers.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with threes, one step away from feel. You know, all the numbers don't go into all the triads. As a seven, I never touched the feeling triad at all. Mm-hmm. I don't, the two-ness that I was so offended about, I don't have it in me. I mean, it's there, but it's because we're all whole people, but I don't go there at stress. Mm-hmm. I don't go there at, you know, at growth. I don't go there. I'm not next to a two. I'm not next to a three. I'm not next to a four. I'm just kind of a thinker and a doer.
Mm-hmm.
Nines have all the things. It's just that you default to, you know, to nineness. And so for nines in growth, you look like a three. And Rob, let's talk about you in growth.
Mm-hmm.
You're someone who doesn't like to do. Rob, they just named a podcast award about you. Mm-hmm. You were one of the most famous Survivor players of all time, and you are heavily lauded as one of the creators of this, you know, strategy of, you know, picking up the bottom feeders and all this other stuff. People love you.
But what about my eyes, Chappelle?
I told you, gorgeous.
Yes.
It's gorgeous. Okay. Anyway, you're just trying to distract me. I'm trying to teach you here, sir.
Yes.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. So when a nine finally gets that inertia, when they get going, they can do things. Look at this empire you've built.
So What I'm hearing, which I think mm-hmm. is so exciting to me, is that, wow, if I could get into this zone, I can mm-hmm. do, I can achieve great things. But mm-hmm. if I can somehow stay out of the bad, the six, which is, mm-hmm. You know, the upside down, when I'm troubleshooting everything and being all neurotic like Steven, that then I can get over to be the three.
Yeah. So the thing is, you are a nine. You are always going to be a nine. But yeah, but when you're in three, you are doing the things. You're achieving, and you're well liked,
and I feel that charismatic. Sometimes. Yes.
Yeah. You're like, look at me. Look at the things I did, and mm-hmm. it's exhausting for you because you're like, oh God, I want to go back to not doing things. But when you get stressed out, yeah, you start to pick up those six behaviors. But that is still a part of you, right? So you can't avoid being stressed out and being anxious about things, but that's why you're good at what you do, right? That anxiety is like troubleshooting. Mm-hmm. If I've seen you stressed, Rob, I want to say one of the know-it-alls, you were trying to put some stuff together, you weren't getting like the sound or whatever. It was
that's like every single one of them. Yeah,
pretty much. But at that moment, you have to go and do the sixth thing, right? You have to troubleshoot, and then you have to rise to the occasion, and then boom, now you're at three and everybody's like fawning over this thing that mm-hmm. you did. And then boom, you go back to nine and you're home and you like turn off everything and you go back to doing you, mm-hmm. the natural you, you know? So we can't avoid six. It's just part of you. Okay. And one is a part of you too, Rob. So you are good at what you do and you like rules and you like having your set of like, you know, things that you do in your mm-hmm. routine, because that's how you're able to keep from doing extra work, right? Like if you do it the right way, you don't have to keep doing it. Mm-hmm. And nines don't like to do.
Because that's what number is next to mine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you got some, Colton called them wings. The Enneagram calls it wings. So some people will try to get really like into like, I'm a nine with a one wing. I got a lot of one in me. Mm-hmm. Or I'm a nine with a lot of eight in me. In my experience, you kind of move between both of them. Mm-hmm. I'm a seven and I got a lot of eight in me. And I'm probably default to a seven with an eight. But the six is there and I can be that person. I am a very good troubleshooter. You know, I like to brainstorm. Sevens are good brainstormers, but when I take the time to troubleshoot, I'm pretty good at it. So wings are there, but mm-hmm. I don't think you stay in your wing forever. It's one of those things that in parts of your life, you'll need that wing and you'll lean on those traits, but you will always be your number.
So when I am sort of like able to realize like, okay, I am exhibiting this behavior. Oh, wait, hold on. Mm-hmm. What am I stressed about that I'm able to sort mm-hmm. of like correct the behavior or sort of like learn something about myself because I am exhibiting this. So like, okay, why am I spending, you know, like an hour trying to, you know, figure out, you know, why is this faucet dripping, drop every 3 minutes.
Right. And is it really that important, right? Mm-hmm. Is that something that you should really be spending your energy on? Nines, like fives, have a limited amount of energy, but they don't have like a battery of like, you know, 100% to go down to 10 and it's over. But nines definitely have a battery life of this is how much time I'm going to spend doing things and then I'm not.
And that's why I could see some of myself in some of these other numbers, Chappelle. Wow. You've blown my mind here today.
When we got the six, you really perked up. And that's when I was like, he's definitely a nine. Because you could see those things and you weren't ready to embrace those because you're like, that's not
I'm
all
like a,
me.
But yeah, Tekashi 6ix9ine.
Yeah, basically. Except not a snitch, hopefully.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Depends on the day. But yeah, and just for the listeners who are now, you know, who may be following along, I do want to touch on what those other numbers kind of go to in stress and in integration, I guess.
By the way, RIP Chappelle's mentions that, well, oh, I'm actually, I've learned I'm the a four.
Oh my God. Yeah. So if you have a strong Enneagram take about this, please just comment on it on Facebook. Jesus, do not tweet me about this. I tweet too much mm-hmm. and I like talking to people. I just told y'all this is my weakness. Leave me alone. Put it on Facebook and I will comment.
I would think it's somebody who tweets so much that you would want more replies.
As a seven, my strength is that I am gluttonous and I live for life and I like people and I like things that make me happy, and tweeting makes me happy and talking to people makes me happy. But like that is my biggest strength and my biggest weakness. I cannot carry that much stuff. I can't talk to everybody about everything. So put it on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I will comment whenever I get a chance.
That's and you could just favorite it. You could just tell Chappelle. He doesn't need to comment on every single one.
Right. But that, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I have to mitigate that kind of stuff for me. So even like I say, sevens are so much fun. There is a time and a place for everything. Mm-hmm. Rob, when I finished my master's program, I had my friends told me that they were going to London. They were going to go to Harry Potter World in London, and they were leaving 9 days from when they typed that conversation with me. I booked my flight that Tuesday. Rob, I am poor. I don't have any money. I spent my money to go on that flight. Like, because I was so trapped in that master's program.
FOMO.
That, yeah, and I couldn't take it anymore. Do you know how much stuff I missed trying to do homework? That's insane. Mm-hmm. So the moment I had a chance, I booked the flight. I spent all my money, went to London, had time of my life. But then I came back and I was poor. And Christmas was around the corner. And I was like, Jesus Christ, what am I going to do to buy gifts? And what am I going to do? And I don't get paid until the, you know, da-da-da-da-da. So for me, being a seven, I have to mitigate that too. And so one of my ways of mitigating that is going to say, hey, if you hear about this and you tweet me, just say you liked it. But if you have any intense Enneagram questions, please email Rob.
No, no intense questions. So that I love the mentions that I love, you know, I love looking at my you know, it's because it's a great way to help me procrastinate when I'm stressed, just to continue to just refresh Twitter nonstop, which I've been doing a lot of late. But, you know, I don't want to reply to a bunch of stuff. So I just want to know what you think. I don't necessarily need to comment back. That's going to screw up my peacekeeping of having to comment on everything. I just want to know what you think.
Right. And I'm physically unable to not talk to you guys. So please just put it on Facebook. I'm sure somebody will post it in an off-topic group or something. And then comment there and I will happily come
topic,
in whenever I have
chance.
On topic, baby. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's talk about where these numbers move and then we'll wrap it up because I don't want to get into too much. Because honestly, if you have really intense questions for the Enneagram, there are tons of places you can listen or read about the Enneagram. Like I said, the Roll Back to You podcast with Ian Morgan Cron. Suzanne Stabile has a podcast as well, Understanding the Enneagram as well. There is a ton of them, but I recommend Ian Morgan Cron and Suzanne Stabile over anybody else. And so let's talk about where these numbers move. So
what do you mean the numbers move?
I'm sorry, where these arrows go, right? Okay. So where they go when they're like in their centers and when they're stressed, blah, blah, blah. So we know nine is in the anger triad and they go to three when they're relaxed and they're integrating. And then when they go to stress, they go to six when they're stressed out. Ones start acting like fours when they are at growth, right?
Moody.
So they're...
With their emotions. Yeah.
I would say in touch with their emotions, definitely authentic. And not so much worried about being right, but just worrying about being them. And I think that's a lot better. But ones at their worst, they look like sevens. Remember, sevens at their best. Oh, I'm sorry. Ones at their best look like sevens. There it is. Because they start to loosen up, stop thinking about the rules so much and start thinking about living life and having fun. Ones at their worst, they go to four and they become like you said, moody. But definitely kind of like self-absorbed and start thinking about less about being right and kind of like, why am I like this? Why? Like they start to feel like they're missing out on life because of the little voice in their head that's saying, you're not doing this right. Twos are helpers when they're at rest, when they're normal in their everyday life. But when they are stressed out, they become eights and they start using their two-ness for evil. You know, then they're normally like, you know, overbearing in a good way, but they become eights and they get combative and controlling. They want to control things instead of just help things, you know?
Mm-hmm. Control things with their giving.
Right, with their giving.
Like, hey, I brought a casserole to your house the other day, Chappelle, and now you owe me.
Right. Why haven't you answered my phone call? That kind of thing. You know, which I didn't ask you to bring a casserole to my house. That doesn't make us tied at the hip and I don't have to be in love with you because of it. But a stressed out eight two might not see it that way. Threes, like nines, they're connected to nines and sixes. So threes will get less performing and more thinking and more in touch with, well, you know, the consequences of their actions. What if this happens? What if that happens? As opposed to like throwing themselves into any of their tasks. And then, of course, when they're stressed out, they become like nines. Have you ever been trying to do something so hard that you just want this to happen so bad that you finally just have to step away from it? That's how threes are when they get stressed out. Like if I can't do my way through this, I just have to, like, I'm done. I'm going to sleep, you know? And then they recharge and they come back from it. They're less stressed out. Then they can tackle life. But they can't, you can't just, you know, will your way through life like a three wants to sometimes. Mm-hmm. Fours are romantics. Normally, like I said, they're so engulfed in themselves internally. But when they are at health, they start looking like a one, and they start using their powers for good as well. But when they start when they're stressed out, they start looking like twos. And so they just have to be aware that they're starting to, you know, not be themselves, you know. Mm-hmm. Same thing with fives. Fives will go to eight. So when fives have gathered enough knowledge, you know, like I said, they're hoarding knowledge. Now they can go out and do the things, right? Because mm-hmm. I got the power. Like, there's nothing worse than arguing with somebody who knows that they're right. Because even if you feel very strongly about something, oh gosh, a five who's done the research.
Do your research. Yeah.
Right. Maybe Chester. Alexander Chester has a lot of charts. Maybe he's a five. Who knows? Mm-hmm. I don't know about his social battery or how he interacts with people, but I know he got a lot of charts.
Yeah.
But yeah, when he finally steps out, he's like, you know, I know the answer. I'm in control. Mm-hmm. Same thing with fives in stress. They start looking like sevens. They stop thinking as much and they start doing, but recklessly, you know, the bad part of seven. Sixes up to nine, you know, stressed out to three. And then sevens, of course, stressed out to ones. And then, you know, at their best, they start looking like fives, start doing less and thinking more. And then, of course, eights. They start using their control for good, to help people, as opposed to their normal control just for control's sake. And then when they're stressed out, they start looking like fives because they have to go into hiding and they have to research and they have to come back with more power. So I can imagine after this transition in power for the presidency, we might see less of Donald Trump, and then we will see more. Mm-hmm. We will see much, much more.
That's, the story checks out. Sounds about right.
Yeah. So there you go. That's the Enneagram in a nutshell, I will say.
Chappelle, this was fantastic. That I totally feel like I have the concept down. Your internet connection was wonderful.
Thanks.
Yeah, and I had no idea that you were, you know, sitting on this as the resident Enneagram expert.
I stopped calling me that.
Yeah,
I'm telling you, Rob. The people who subscribe, they subscribe. And so I'm going to get, like, I might not get angry emails from the listeners, but like, if someone sees the word Enneagram, they're going to come at me. Cause they're going to like, have you done the research? Have you certified?
No, you're fine.
I think so as well. But, you know, it was fun talking to you about it. I definitely saw a void and like, I knew you didn't understand it, from what you called it. But like I said, I think so. The Enneagram is supposed to be about self-exploration and interpersonal relationships, right? Like, if I see you acting stressed out, like, and you're troubleshooting a bunch of stuff, I know Rob's stressed out, you know, like, this is not normal Rob behavior. Whereas there's somebody who's just going to be stressed all the time, like a Steven. And you're like, okay, this is Steven. This is just Steven, you know?
Yeah.
So now I know how to interact with y'all.
Can I ask you one more question about this? So I also selfishly am thinking about, like, boy, what is the first lady of podcasting? And I think I have some guesses here, but do you find that are certain numbers more compatible with other partners, or that has nothing to do with this?
I don't think that has anything to do with it. I think people like to like people like to make the Enneagram like parlor talk and like not parlor the app.
Not yet, yeah.
Right, it might be. But it's like, you know, like just like, you know, cocktail conversation or like fun game to kind of like put different TV characters in, or like sort them into houses. But I think it's a lot more serious than that. If you start to like look into, you know, what these motivations are, it can really change the way you interact with people. But as far as compatibility goes, no, I think we're all whole people. And as a seven, rules are really difficult for me. They just are. RSVPs are difficult for me. It takes everything in my power to RSVP. I hate it. I hate it so much. I just hate committing. And I could be with a one. I think she would just have to be like used to me having that struggle, right? And then I would have to be mature enough to realize that she needs these rules. And if, you know, and if that's the case, then that's what we're going with. Same thing with sixes. Six will look at me and say, oh my God, he is so reckless. He just jumps out into the world and does anything. He doesn't think about what if it's raining or what if he runs out of gas or what if it's this, you know. But I need something like that, right? Like, so you need somebody to say, hey, what if, you know, make sure you check all the boxes, right? Before you do the thing. And so you can find compatibility in anybody. I think there are probably types that are more suitable, but I don't think any type is kind of like, you know, like don't, it's not like a horoscope, like, yo, no, Leo's and Aquarius.
Right.
I don't want to get into that, you know, so that very different. So if you're curious as the first lady of podcasting, I guess you should ask her.
I think I know.
What you thinking?
I think she's an eight.
I don't think Nicole's an eight.
You don't think so?
I'd guess six.
Six. Questioner.
I guess six. Yeah. If I had to guess. I don't know her as well as you do.
Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah.
I'm excited to, you know, learn more about this. But, you know, I feel, especially when we talk about, like, the protector, like, I feel like that Nicole does have a lot of, eights, but then can, go. Is, for an eight, is the two or the five the positive?
The two is the good thing.
The two is,
because they use their control for good, you know? Like I said, they like fighting for the underdog, but, you know, when you can control, like, hey, like, this person is not happy, or this mm-hmm. person is missing something in life, and I'm going to make it happen. Mm-hmm. You know, that person is weak. Eights don't, like I said, weakness doesn't register with them. They don't really. So if you're in a room and you're not, you know, sure of yourself, eight almost won't notice you. And so if they do notice you and they feel like this is their project, you know, then they're gonna make it happen. They will it into existence. And those, I think it can manifest itself as a two.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right.
There is an Enneagram quiz. I know some people like quizzes, and I know, like, that's, like I said, the fives are cross-referencing everything I'm saying anyway. So I guess I can send you, when we get off the air, something, find like a little quick quiz. But I will say this, a quiz cannot tell you your motivations. If you read through the numbers like Rob just did, then you will hear the one that speaks to you. And if you have more questions about it, you can read into it. There, like I said, there are a ton of podcasts. But yeah, I would always suggest doing the research on your own and kind of just thinking about your life and the choices you make and why you make them. I know exactly why I'm a seven. And I think a lot of the Enneagram, like I said, is tied to trauma. And if you can look back and find out, like, what's making you like this? Like, what's making Chappelle run from everything and just live life on, you know, to the fullest, to not have to sit in, you know, horrible, you know, sadness and stuff like that? Why are you dealing with that in that way? Then that's how you figure out your number. You don't just take a quiz and let somebody else tell you about you. You know you better than I do.
All right. The great Chappelle is on Twitter. He is at Chappelle's _ show. That's Chappelle's _
show. Yep. Not like Dave. This is me.
That's a different Chappelle. Guy. Different guy.
That's a different guy. Yeah.
Funny guy too, but different. That's a different guy. Yeah.
Yeah, I heard he's funny.
He's funny. Yeah. But this was great. It's a criminal sin. Chappelle has under 2,800 Twitter followers at the recording time of this podcast. What's up with people?
They are living life like it's golden, and they don't need me to darken their doorstep with my ridiculous tweets. So yeah. If you don't follow me, please don't. Okay. just like, protect your own peace. I'm a mess. Don't do it.
You're a prolific tweeter. And then what's next for you, Chappelle? What are you doing the rest of this weekend?
I don't have anything planned this weekend. I'm probably just gonna work. I like mm-hmm. Like, it's COVID, so, you know, I just like work at my leisure. And then I'll be watching The Walking Dead, Fear the Walking Dead, mm-hmm. and Walking Dead World Beyond, where I will be podcasting with Jessica Lease and Josh Wiggler every week on Post Show Recap. So check that out. I think this is the finale, mid-season finale of Fear the Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. And so I'll be doing that. And other than that, nope, I'll just be hanging out waiting for Rob to call me.
Okay. What else you want to talk about? Like, what else are you sitting on? I feel like that you're sort of I guess I could talk about, like, this Enneagram thing. And then it turns out you, like, knew everything. Like, what else are you sitting? You got, like, how many degrees do you have?
That's personal. Three. But I'm supposed to be going back to school to get in my last degree, but I started.
How many do you need?
I want to be a doctor, but just because, okay, here's another thing about sevens. Sevens are so much fun that people don't think about us as smart.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not what you think. Like, when people describe me, they always say the funny guy, yeah, or the fun guy, whatever. But no one ever says, like, you know how smart Chappelle is? It's just like moments like this, right?
Yeah. But there's so many, you know, smart people that are like, but nobody ever says I'm funny.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so sevens kind of have the opposite thing. We're so lighthearted, yeah, that people don't actually see us as deep. And yes, so for me, one of my goals in life is to get my doctorate. And I have not done that yet.
Yes.
And so when I do that,
Dr. then Chappelle. I will make.
Oh, yeah. And I will milk that.
Yes.
I'm going to ride that thing.
What
will
you do? Will you teach at a university? Like, what is your ultimate goal?
Absolutely not. I have been trying to get out of, I told you, sevens will have 7-8 careers.
Yes.
And I've been trying to get out of education for forever. No, I'm kidding.
Yes.
I would not teach at a university. I would literally continue doing what I'm doing right now.
Podcast.
And just be a doctor. Sure. I would just be a doctor.
Think about how many podcasts you could book as Dr. Chappelle.
I'd have to ask Liana.
Yes.
She doesn't go by doctor, but she is very much a doctor.
Yes.
You know, I'd have to ask her and see what
she's
she,
from
see
science. Sure.
She is from science. She's the best. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Amanda Rabinowitz, you know, my favorite doctor.
Yes.
And so, yeah, I could ask them, but no, I definitely, I'm one of those people who would waste this degree. I want it because I think I deserve it. I think I've earned it. I've done the research. I've done the homework. I got the straight A's. Bing. And now I want that degree and I want my name to say doctor. I was the first person in my family to go to college. And so I feel like I have like a weight to kind of carry, you know, and lead the legacy. Like, who's going to be the first doctor if not me? So that's what I want to do.
Yeah. Well, that's really amazing. You know, I feel that we are so blessed that we found you.
Cut this out. Are we cutting this out? We're editing this out.
Why, why are you so uncomfortable with if anybody gives you a compliment? What part of that number is that?
Why are you so uncomfortable with conflict, Rob? Let's get into you.
Yeah, well, what's the conflict that you're saying I can't say anything nice about you?
I don't like to talk about me. I like to talk about other stuff.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah, that's fine.
We cutting this out. I don't care.
We don't have to explore that. All right, but anyway, this was so great.
Thank you.
Let's figure out what we're going to talk about next.
Did Josh tell you about the hospital?
The hospital? No. Josh is in the hospital?
No, Josh isn't in the hospital, but it's goofy. Just don't let it
happen. Walking Dead thing?
It's kind of.
Yeah.
Kind of. You should really listen to the podcast.
I know. I should. I mean to, and then, I'm just trying to keep up. You know, what I need to do is not be on top of current events. I think if there weren't so many current events, I feel like that I could be really, like, I feel like that, you know, when there was less current events, I used to be way on top of more podcasts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just selfishly saying that you should listen to the podcast that I'm on. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying listen to all of them. Just go listen to one episode and listen to me laugh at Josh and Jess. They are great, by the way. I feel like that's underrated how great they are.
Yeah. Well, that I know. That you're not telling me anything new there. All right. So, Chappelle, this was great. I'm going to do more research. What part of me is this? That I'm probably going to watch a bunch of YouTube videos then about my Enneagram type.
Yeah, so that's still nine-ish because you have things that you need to be doing. And you're not going to do that because you're going to go watch YouTube videos. You're going to go fill your time with menial tasks, and then Nicole's going to come home and she's going to hate you.
Hey.
She's going to come home and be like, hey, what are you doing? Oh. You got a list of... No, yeah. Eight. And she got a list of things. And you're going to be like, oh, yeah, I was talking to Chappelle. What do you mean?
Yeah, okay. That's fine. You know, but if the coffee is strong enough, I can get to a three. So,
listen.
All right.
Yeah, I'm a coffee enthusiast. I'm an enthusiast in general.
Yeah. All right. Well, Chappelle, this was fantastic. Thank you so much. Yeah. If you want to be posting in that Facebook comment thread with Chappelle, you can get a hold of that. Go to robisawebsite.com/patron. Chappelle, thank you so much. Follow him on Twitter and Instagram and let him know. Chappelle, I do have to say that I follow you on Instagram. I thought you had a real thirst trap post on your Instagram story the other day.
On Founders Day. Rob, you told me Happy Founders Day, and I was so surprised, one.
Yes.
But I was also like, thank you. That's great. People don't tell me Happy Founders Day enough.
I wasn't sure if I was supposed to say Happy Founders Day. That I wasn't sure that it seemed like it was a happy occasion.
Yeah, I text Asia, and I told her. I said, Rob told me Happy Founders Day, and she thought it was very funny as well. We had a good laugh.
Yeah. Yes, but posting shirtless Instagram stories.
Oh, yeah, that was for Founders Day, too.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But don't be sending people to my Instagram looking for thirst traps, because you're not going to get them that much.
Okay. All right. Chappelle, thank you so much. Thank you so much for listening. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.